Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome to this Friday evening edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, you know that. But it's habit, as is so much of this habit. Like telling you what time it is when you're sitting there with a computer that's got the clock right in the bottom. But, bear with me, I'm a creature of habit. I'm 45 and cranky, okay? So it's Friday, and oh, it's a beautiful Friday out there. Oh, God, it's pretty. I mean, and it's been this way all week long. Exquisite, gorgeous, that warm late August sun. I've just about had to be drove in here with a big stick. Because otherwise, I might be out in the building doing some organizing, some straightening, and just, you know, stuff you do just to crack a little sweat and feel like you remember what it means to, yeah. Of course, it's just as well I'm in here, too, because out under that magnificent Friday evening sun, those first few drops of sweat come rolling off of you and you think, time for some sweet tea. Yeah, so I got my sweet tea. We got a beautiful Friday evening. And being Friday, and being as I am the only live programming on the network today, this is it. This is the only opportunity to sound off and get off your chest whatever might be on it. Get the burr out from under your saddle, the bee out from under your bonnet, because the weekend is on the way. And while we have fabulous programming here on The Horn, America's Liberal Voice, on the weekend, none of it is subject to you calling in and sharing your opinions. Just a reminder of what the weekend schedule entails. It is the Rick Smith Show from Pennsylvania on Friday evening around 5-ish, somewhere between 5 o'clock and 5:20 or so p.m. Eastern Time. Followed by Rick's Place with Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, rolling your way at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific. Then at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 Pacific, it's the Great Weekend Mellow Out with Billy Shears and Night Sounds. Kick back, relax. Join it. Hey, join us in the headonradionetwork.com chat room. Saturday evening for Night Sounds. It is a zany little party in there. We see more people in the Head On Radio Network chat room for Night Sounds than just about any other program. And so it's a great way to get to know some of the online multimedia Horn family if you have never met them before. So all of that is coming your way this weekend, but you can't call in and express yourself. That, you've got 3 hours to do, begin, well, okay, 2 hours and 55 minutes, more or less, starting now. So you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, that's toll free. On your nickel, if you want to save us the nickel, you can reach us at 304, us, me and that mouse in my pocket, 304-658-3333. They both ring into the same place, and you will be treated on either line with the respect due to those who participate in this little experiment that we call Conversation Radio. All the programming on the horn, I should mention, is brought to you by virtue of the listeners to the Head On Radio Network, those of you who stand shoulder to shoulder to make sure that independent, liberal, progressive conversation remains a force to be reckoned with on the internets, as well as the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They also co-sponsor all the programming on the horn. crmw.net, and most importantly, coalriverwind.org. Coalriverwind.org. Go there. Sign the petition. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Pass it around. This is our one opportunity to change West Virginia's future. Really, I mean, it's that's not hyperbole. That's real. We have one chance. I believe, unless I'm, I think, Massey Energy, the Massey Holes, have two out of the four permits that they need to begin the devastation of the 10-square-mile Coal River Mountain Complex. Over the course of the next 14 years, they will take this last great untouched high mountain in southern West Virginia, and they will turn it into a barren moonscape. It will be a dead thing. A crow will have to pack a lunch to fly across it. All right? A buzzard would have to pack a lunch to fly across it. They will destroy it. It will destroy the homes of many people that I know and many people that I love. This is it. This is where the rubber meets the road. Thanks to the kickoff of the Coal River Wind petition media campaign, informational campaign, coalriverwind.org has seen some 3,800 signatures to the petition. Sure would be nice to start shoving it toward 10,000. Because at some point in time, you begin to get that exponential sort of growth that goes from 3,800 to 10,000 to 100,000 to a million. Because it obtains its own inertial force. So I sincerely hope that you will go there. And put your name on the petition. Stand shoulder to shoulder with them who stand shoulder to shoulder with us, who stand on these high places and try to protect the rest of you, because whether you realize it or not, we are all downstream. We are all downwind. Now, there are several things to go into this evening, some more humorous than others, some more serious than others. But this being Friday and the last chance to get your licks in, what we'll do first is go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, my usual McCain bashing.
Okay, bash away. Get the big bat. Well, get the big ball bat out.
We're about to. The Keating 5 is rearing its head in the blogosphere, and it won't be too long before it hits the mainstream media.
The for-profit media is actually going to talk about the Keating 5, you think?
Yeah. They made him McCrazy made a big mistake. He started bringing up Resco again.
Oh, so sauce for the goose becomes sauce for the gander.
Yeah.
And you actually think the for-profit media is going to go along with this?
Well, it's either that or they're going to look like the shills they are.
They've never had a problem looking like that before, have they?
Well, it's getting downright embarrassing. Plus, here's a really good one. The story with the houses, you know, the out of touch thing, the super rich robber baron elitist tag.
Yeah.
Sticking big time.
Well, it's about damn time something stuck.
Yeah, this one is sticking really good. It's developing legs. Obama came out with another ad nailing him with it. And the only thing that
McCain I saw the McCain House ad that the boys over at WD40.com had posted. Is this different from that one?
This is a new one. This is Country Club Economics.
Ah, oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Checkered pants economics.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great hat. That's a great hat. When you wear that, do you get a free bowl of soup? Oh, but it looks good on you, Your Honor.
Yeah. And what's really neat is even the pundits are starting to jump all over McCain about this noun, verb, and POW thing.
Again, it's about time.
Yeah, it's past time.
Did you catch the business about his car? McGrumpy's car?
Yeah, something about he couldn't remember the last
Can't remember what kind of car he's got. Now this is Merca, Susan. And here in Merca, even if the thing barely goes, we know what kind. We're more likely to know what kind of car we have than be able to tell the names of our pets.
Exactly.
What do you got there, Senator McGrumpy? Well, my friends, I have a 1902 Hupmobile. No.
Hey, I gotta tell you, I have to stop and look up what year my kids were born. I've got a rotten memory for that.
But by God, you can name the year, make, and model of every automobile you've ever owned, can't you?
Yes.
That's not a shame. That's the American love affair with the automobile. But you know, John McCain hasn't had that love affair because John McCain has always had someone to drive him around, or a little chauffeur, or someone to buy him a car. We love our cars because our cars are the second largest investments that we in general make. Our house being the first, our car being the second.
Exactly.
You know, we name our cars. I remember once upon a time in my salad days when I had a used Porsche. Can't buy them new. I mean, come on. But I had a used one, and I loved her to death. And her name was Ilsa.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, had to, you know. And you know, we name our cars. He's not in the chat room tonight, but our buddy Matthew is notorious for naming cars. I think one of them was Gretchen. Yeah, we do that. We love our cars.
Okay.
But
yeah,
McCain's not like us, so McCain can't even remember beyond the fact that he has one.
Yeah. Okay, here's another thing. Up on Centam, there is a posting called McCain's Mansions. Now, it's a video. I urge everybody, go watch it. It is and then mail it to everybody.
Is this the one from Brave New Films?
You betcha.
Yeah, Bob Greenwald, what beautiful work they do.
I just love him. He is just so cool. I just adore the man. He is just brilliant.
I want somebody out there, and this just occurred to me earlier today, and Bob Greenwald would be the guy to do it. I want somebody out there to do a take on Cindy McCain using the opening credits to Green Acres.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about? You know the scene where Lisa Douglas is there and she's flinging the clothes from Saks Fifth Avenue and Bergdorf Goodman out of the boxes in New York, that kind of thing. And because I saw that just the other day, I saw that opening scene, and it occurred to me that at a distance in that scene, Cindy McCain looks a lot like her.
Yeah,
and instead of hollering, Oliver, it could be Sydney. And I'll bet, and you know what? I will bet you that Cindy McCain makes hotcakes about as good as Lisa Douglas did. Remember those wonderful scenes of Mr. Douglas taking her biscuits and using them for doorstops?
Ah. Okay, here's another little good. There is a site which I urge everybody to go to. It's called Vietnam Veterans Against McCain. Bookmark it, fellow people.
Okay, and that's what it is, Vietnam Veterans Against McCain dot something?
Dot org.
Okay, Vietnam Veterans Against McCain dot org.
Yeah, it is, or just Google Vietnam Veterans Against McCain. It is huge. But among other things, there are PDF documents, 32 of them, of the transcripts of the man betraying his country, committing treason.
Well, treason's a pretty heady word to be throwing around, Susan. I mean, treason?
Well, what would you call aiding and abetting the enemy?
Giving aid and comfort? Giving aid and comfort to the enemy? Why, that sounds like treason.
You bet your bippy.
And I've got just the bippy to lose, too.
What's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. If he can call Obama a traitor, I can call him one. And I've got the written proof.
Hear, hear.
It's up on that website. Go look. They despise him.
I haven't yet. Yeah, I mean, well, what? One of, it wasn't one, the guy that was actually in the POW camp with him wouldn't pee on him if he was on fire?
Yeah, you've heard of General Hackworth?
Oh gosh, yes.
Okay. He was in the same POW camp. There's also
no kidding. Hack was?
Yeah. Yeah, there's also an affidavit by him. Guess what? McCain was not tortured.
You know, that's been abundantly, that's been mentioned on more than one occasion. But getting someone to pick, no, he wasn't tortured. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of the story of the fact that the Bush family were literally the enablers of the Third Reich via their finance and banking business at Brown Brothers Harriman. It's real. The documents in the federal archives that denote and show clearly that Prescott Bush was charged under the Trading with the Enemy Act in 1942 or 1943, they're there. They haven't been disappeared yet. But, you know, could you get the New York Times to report on this? No. Washington Post? Sorry.
Down the memory hole.
And the same thing applies to McCain. And I was actually going to touch on this a little bit later. I'm glad you brought it up, Susan, because this meme where anytime you say John McCain and you're a Democrat and you're an Obama supporter and you have to say, and of course John McCain is a war hero, is getting to the point where, you know, it's making my gorge rise a little bit. I'm a little bit sick of it because I can't figure out what it is that qualifies John McCain as a damn hero. Okay, I mean, if I drive 60 miles down the road, I can walk into a hospital down in the Kanawha Valley called Herbert J. Thomas Memorial Hospital. All right. Now that hospital is named after a fella from around there. He was nobody, you know. He wasn't a somebody in the community. He was just another one of the kids from up the holler who was drafted and went into the defense of this country in World War II. He became a Marine, and he rose to the level of sergeant, and he was fighting on one of the Pacific Islands. And one of his men, in an attempt to take out when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor, there you go, Bob. He was trying to take out a Japanese machine gun nest, and one of his men lobbed a grenade in there, and being the jungle, it hit one of those nasty little jungle vines, got caught on it, and swung back at the people who threw it. And Herbert J. Thomas didn't think twice. There's the grenade. Here I am. I'm jumping on the grenade. No more Herbert J. Thomas.
Yeah.
But he was awarded posthumously, as is often the case with the Medal of Honor, he was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Right.
And they named a hospital for him in South Charleston, West Virginia. That is a hero. There are stories of heroes throughout our nation's history. Crashing five jets and bombing civilian infrastructure ain't heroic.
Yeah.
And you know what? Those horses' asses in the Republican Party mocked John McCain for getting shot, or John Kerry for getting shot up with their stupid little Purple Heart Band-Aids. Oh.
You ever heard?
Yeah, I know.
Have you ever heard of a newspaper called The New Republic?
A magazine? Yes. I used to subscribe to it many years ago.
Okay. It has an article in it. Oh, this is going to... I'm going to be putting this one up on SynTab, too. It's called Made Man. It asserts that the mover and the shaker of the McCain marriage is not John McCain. It's Cindy.
Oh, you mean that she wears the pants?
Yep.
Bob, she's got the millions.
Yep.
I mean, how could she not wear the pants?
it mentions, I want to read this one paragraph to you. It's a crack up. It's describing the wedding. And it says, there was, as it happens, one small incident that hinted at this dynamic. At the climax of the wedding ceremony, with everyone looking on, the pastor prepared to present the new couple. I now pronounce you Mr. and Mrs., at which point there was an awkward pause. He stopped. He obviously didn't remember, recalls David Fraser, who was then Jim Hensley's corporate lawyer. Finally, mercifully, someone from the wedding party interjected, John McCain.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Yeah, well, why am I not surprised? Because I'm not.
Between his father, his grandfather, and his wife, the man has a massive inferiority complex that he's taking out on this country.
Yeah, and he's just a... He's just a piss-poor human being. He's just a piss-poor human being.
Yeah, I would love to see Dr. Rick proceed to just shrink his head up one side and down the other.
Oh, I think that'll happen sometime.
Preferably before the election.
Yeah, most likely. All right, well, Susan, we've got that's a great little bit to work with, and I'm going to go a little further with the John McCain hero theme. And I know there are Democrats out there that go, oh, Bob, stop. Stop. It's not nice. Oh, just sing Kumbaya, Bob.
No, that's how we ended up with
the pig-eyed, jug-eared
Dukakis and all those. And that's how we ended up with all them Republican presidents.
Just let him slap Obama around some more and don't say anything mean about him. If you do, we'll cry.
Going to haul off and kick McCain in the nuts. I'm sorry.
He'd have to have them to kick, and, you know, he kind of threw those away when he married Cindy, but that's between, you know, I mean.
Ain't that the truth.
Susan, have a wonderful weekend, dear.
You too. Love to Agnes.
All right. Take care. Bye now. The moderator of the SendTab site, as well as our overall news ninja, Susan, calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Yeah, that reminded me of something. Yeah, so Cindy McCain wears the pants, huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, the man song. I don't take no crap from anybody else but you. I would the pants around here when I finish with your laundry? Because I'm a guy you don't want to fight. When I say jump, you say you're right. I'm the man of this house.
He's the man. He's the man.
What I say goes around here, right out the window. And I don't want to hear a lot of whining, so I'll shut up. The sooner you learn who's boss around here, the sooner you can give me my orders to you. Because I'm head honcho around here, but it's all in my head.
He's the man. He's the man.
And I can have sex any time that you want. Because I'm a man who has knees, but they're not that important. And don't expect any flowers from me, because if I'm not mistaken, you prefer jewelry.
I'm the king of my castle when you're not around.
He's the man. He's the man.
And I'll drink and watch sports whenever I want to get in trouble. And I'll come home when I'm good and ready to sleep on the couch. Because a man's got to do what a man's got to do, and I'm going to do what you tell me to, because I'm top dog around here, but I've been neutered.
He's the man. He's the man.
You're the man.
If ever there was a song to describe the relationship between Cindy McCain and old 894, that's it. I'm top dog around here, but I've been neutered. Yeah, that's you. That's you, old 894.
Fixed.
And he didn't even know there was anything wrong with him.
Fixed.
But seriously, this business. Oh, he's a war hero. Kiss my ass. I'm sorry. No. Not by any wild-ass stretch of the imagination. No. And congratulations to Michael Moore for catching up with me in something I've only been saying for about the last year, in noting that there is nothing particularly heroic about dropping bombs on peasants. In his book, it's a little thing called the Ask Mike, Michael Moore's political guide. He answers questions from real Americans. And one of them is, why did the Vietnamese shoot down John McCain and put him in prison for 5 years? He seems like such a nice guy. And then Michael Moore elaborates on John McCain's military history. Oh, we all revere John McCain's service to our country. He crashed 5 of our jets, four of them he wasn't even getting shot at. Much more of that kind of service. He was Gomer Pyle with a jet engine. Golly, Admiral Daddy! Now, John McCain wrote about all this in his book. And what Michael Moore points out, and this is just straight out of the book, and it's all true. It is all, there's that word. Screw true. It's all factual. All right? This is all factual. John McCain flew 23 bombing missions over North Vietnam during a campaign that was called Operation Rolling Thunder. During Operation Rolling Thunder, the United States flew a combined total of 307,000 attack sorties against North Vietnam. During Operation Rolling Thunder, the United States dropped 643,000 tons, not pounds, tons, of bombs on North Vietnam. So, let's see, 643,000 tons, a ton is 2,000 pounds, You do the math. I'm lazy. Operation Rolling Thunder went on for 44 months. Now, that math I can do. That is 3 years and 8 months, during which time the United States dropped on North Vietnam, little bitty North Vietnam, more ordnance than was dropped in the entire Pacific campaign during all of World War II. This includes Iwo Jima. This includes the Marianas, the Philippines, the bombing of Tokyo. Yeah. Now, just consider those numbers. We killed more than 2 million civilians in Vietnam that we know of. Another million or so, give or take a few that, you know, weren't worth counting in Laos and Cambodia, which, by the way, were illegal. And all in a situation in which, curiously, just like Iraq, the people that we were murdering hadn't done anything to us. So John McCain wrote about all this in his book, Faith of Our Fathers. Well, I mean, he wrote it, or a ghostwriter wrote it, but McCain's never been known for his hard work. This is what McCain wrote, and Michael Moore notes it in his book. My friends, I do believe that had we taken the war to the north and made full, consistent use of air power in the north, we ultimately would have prevailed. Now, take into account the numbers that we just went over. Over 44 months, we dropped 643,000 tons of bombs on North Vietnam. We killed 1,000 civilians a week during Operation Rolling Thunder. Really, we did. We killed 1,000 Vietnamese a week for 44 months. As Michael Moore points out, that's roughly one September 11th every single month for 44 months. We did it to people who had not done anything to us. And McCain himself writes that had we taken the war to the north and made full, consistent use of air power, what in the hell do you call dropping more ordnance on a single country than was dropped in the entire Second World War in the Pacific Theater if you don't call it making full, consistent use of air power? This is sickening. By McCain's own account, what he was doing when he was finally shot down was bombing what he called a heavily populated part of Hanoi. Hello? Populated? He was, by his own admission, bombing a population center? Just for the edification of anybody who might be moderately confused, that's a war crime! That is a crime against humanity! Shh! Don't tell the Repiglicans, but there's a damn war criminal running for office. There's a war criminal in the White House, and there's a war criminal running to get into the White House. And on a policy basis, they are virtually indistinguishable one from the other, because neither of them gives a tinker's damn about how many civilians they slaughter, or why, or not, or for no reason at all. They are both psychopaths. But every time you have to, every time you mention John McCain, you have to say, and of course he's a great American hero. Yes. Horse feathers. Bug spray. If that's the definition of hero in America today, we could do with a hell of a lot less of them. But of course, that's not the definition of a hero. What did Shakespeare say? Some are born to greatness. Others have greatness thrust upon them. Heroes are those people who, by dint of circumstance and necessity, have greatness thrust upon them, and who do things that in the light of hindsight look like greatness, but at the time they're being done just seem like the ordinary business of another day. Audie Murphy? Hero. Alvin York? Hero. Tommy Bennett, one of my particular favorites, him being a West Virginian and all. Tommy Bennett, hero. By God, at the same time that John McCain was bombing a heavily populated civilian center in Hanoi, Thomas J. Bennett, a young man who was a student at West Virginia University and a profoundly committed follower of Christ Jesus, John McCain couldn't go to Vietnam without a multi-million-dollar aircraft under his ass. Thomas J. Bennett went to Vietnam as a conscientious objector and refused to carry a gun. Even without that gun, he made sure that several human beings came back from Vietnam and didn't wind up with their name on that black granite wall that he instead replaced with his own. We named a bridge on Interstate 79 after Tommy Bennett. We named a big square dormitory tower on the Evansdale campus of West Virginia University after Tommy Bennett. But you know what? All he was doing was what happened to be called for him to do on that given day. Just another hero for the working day. John McCain's a hero. Look, it's this way. It really is. If Alvin York is a hero, if Herbert J. Thomas is a hero, if Audie Murphy was a hero, if Tommy Bennett was a hero, then quite simply put, there is no way that John McCain can be called that without watering down the service and the sacrifice of those four names I just mentioned. John McCain is not fit to touch the dirty socks of any one of those four individuals. John McCain does not have inside him the dedication and the devotion that Tommy Bennett, Herbert Thomas, Alvin York, or Audie Murphy had in their toenail clippings. And it's about damned time that we, opposing John McCain, started calling bullshit on what a hero John McCain is. What they're doing is watering down over the course of time. What they're doing is watering down the meaning of the word hero so that anybody who registers as a repig-licking and ever put on so much as the hat of a crossing guard can call themselves a hero. A couple of comments from our buddy David in Tennessee. Subject, making the bomb load real. An understandable way to envision that amount of ordnance, 640,000 tons equals 20... Oh, here we go. Thank you. In another life, our buddy David in Tennessee was actively involved in the packaging of things, I think. 640,000 tons of bombs equals 26,000 semi-tractor trailer loads, 26,000 52-footers worth of high explosives, 26,000 52-foot trailers full of high explosives in 44 months. More than we dropped during all of the Second World War from December 7, 1941 to August 1945. And we dropped them on peasant huts in one of the poorest countries in that entire region. David also notes that this, again, in line with a theme that I've been working lately, is repig-licking code. When McCain writes, had we made full and complete use of air power, that is code for damn peaceniks tied our hands and prevented victory. See, the repig-licking, warmongering authoritarian right is still in profound denial of the fact that we screwed up and we lost that war. They lost that war. Remember, Nixon was going to bring us peace with honor? Here's your lovely parting gift, dick. A denial mechanism about not losing that war, which we did. Tweren't the hippies. It was the Westmorelands and the Robert J. McNamaras and the Henry Kissingers. And frankly, just because you got in the seat of a jet and you went and you dropped a whole bunch of high explosives on some little brown people living in a thatched roof hut next to a sodden rice paddy, that's not that, no. Listen, this is the moral equivalent of that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer gets a black belt in karate by beating up 8-year-olds. That's what this is. And then there's what he did in the POWMIA issue, and that's equally shameful. Maybe we'll get to that, too. But congratulations to Michael Moore for finally putting out for a significantly larger portion of the population to see than have perhaps heard me an honest-to-God, fact-based account of what it now means in 21st century America to say, oh, but he's a war hero. Phew. That's a hero. I don't want no part of heroism. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Ed.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Keeping up the plow, but how about your health?
Oh, I'm dandy. I'm fine as frog's hair.
I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, we're still trying to figure out some of why what was going on was going on, but we're getting some answers and, you know, just making the best of the American healthcare system. After all, it's the best healthcare system in the world, right?
Well,
no, try not to get choked laughing, Ed. I know.
We're behind every country that is anything. We're behind. And I have to take lessons off of them, but I wanted to find out how he was. I called your house there one day, probably first part of the week. Didn't get a hold of nobody, but I thought I'd give a call on the
phone. We had family in during the first part of the week, so that's entirely possible. We were out and gone a whole bunch of the time.
Yeah. Well, who's going to be the appointee? That's what I wanted to get an opinion.
Oh, the vice president?
Yeah.
I take our buddy Mark Levine's advice very seriously, and he says it's Kane.
Did he?
Yeah, well, obviously Obama hasn't said anything, but Mark Levine is saying it's going to be Virginia Governor Tim Kaine.
Yeah, well, I sort of lean between him and Joe Biden. I like Biden the best, I believe.
Of the two, yeah, me too. But I think Biden's got baggage that ultimately Obama won't want to deal with.
Yeah, and he made a comment during those interviews about Obama not having the qualifications and the ability to do the job of president, the lack of experience, in other words. And it's hard to get past that. But if he'd been thinking right, he'd say, well, George Bush got in, so that qualifies anybody to be president now.
And he would, but Lord, that's the last person you want to compare yourself with, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, I would say that if he could, that it would be just the reverse of what I'm saying, though. In other words, if George Bush can get in there, it does qualify anybody to be president.
Yeah, truly, what they used to say, that, well, anybody can be president. Yeah, there's a lot.
And we proved it, didn't we?
Yeah. Any moron can be president.
Yeah. And the pitiful part of it is, the way I saw this thing 2 months ago, that McCain would be 15 to 20 points behind at this point, and still may be. It's hard to tell, depending on where these polls are coming out of. But anybody that is stupid enough to get in that category of the percentage that he has got, it's living proof that this nation has got their head where the sun don't shine.
Well, honest Pete Ed, if you compare a guy who successfully traversed the Ivy League and Harvard Law and graduated well, and you compare that guy with a guy who had to beg, borrow, and steal his way out of the Naval Academy, which one is the smarter guy?
Well, you can tell, even his temperament is not a good thing for president. He's about half haywire, I think. As I said before on the air, I really believe that there was brain damage done to him while he was over there, while he was in captivity.
You know, we've
does something to you, Bob, and it can't be helped.
No, exactly. Now, that part of it can't be helped. When you are kept in solitary confinement, weird things start happening to your brain. You know how we know that? We kept Jose Padilla, the American who was charged and then held in solitary by the military without recourse to any, American citizen, was held in the Navy brig in solitary down in South Carolina for years. And by the time they got around to finally having to give him a trial, Ed, they brought him out of solitary, and he was a mental wreck.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you have rats and roaches, and then after a while, after enough of them run over you, they don't have to be there. I mean, you see them anyway. And it does do things. It don't take long of being totally by yourself. It's good to be yourself voluntarily for a while. You got to have that downtime.
Yeah, just to blow the carbon out.
Yeah, but when you are forced to have it, and that silence has got to do something to you. And we used to run silent in the Navy. And if they called what they was doing silent, because the engines were still running and stuff like that. Anytime you have that, and with your sonar that which they had then too, you ain't running silent. But even the quietness of 24 hours of not talking and like that, it sort of gives you the heebie-jeebies. So I just can't imagine what a person goes through like that. Now, that's no fault of his own that he was put like that, but it ain't nobody else's fault either. He might, you know, if he enlisted, it's his fault. But I think his dad was some kind of high-ranking admiral or something.
His daddy and his daddy and his granddaddy before him.
Yeah.
And see, this is
that's how he probably got through the academy.
That's exactly how he got into the academy.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Bush was a legacy admission to Yale, McCain was a legacy admission to the United States Naval Academy.
Yeah.
Now to get into the service academies, you have to have an appointment. Usually, those come from senators, congressmen, that kind of thing. But
sure, he had plenty to do, you know.
Yeah, but there are plenty of ways for an admiral to get his boy in.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that
he had plenty of people to do it for him.
And he is a dim bulb.
Yeah.
Consider, you know, he graduated 894th out of 899 in his graduating class, Ed.
That is pitiful that people can make it as high as he's even made it.
Well, he wasn't, you know, technically he wasn't even sharp enough for aviator school. So they got him into that. And you got to understand that being a naval aviator was a little bit of a badge of shame in the McCain family because they were surface warfare officers.
Yeah. Well, he crashed too, didn't he?
Five jets.
Shot down, whatever.
Five jets, Ed. Five jets he crashed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that shows...
And some of those were not a case of being shot down. That was just not being a very good pilot.
Yeah. Well, when you get into positions like that, Bob, it'll show up. That's like being put on a gun turret or anything else. If you ain't got what it takes for that kind of repercussion of the guns and the stuff like that, and I saw it. I absolutely saw a guy pitch a 5-inch 38 powder end up in the air and let it hit. And you're talking about people that had a tight butt until one of us picked it up and threw it overboard. That's the explosive end, the projector, you know, for the 5-inch 38 is a two-piece affair.
Right. It's the
powder keg and the projector.
Right. Right. And that's one. That's one of those breech loading affairs, isn't it?
Yeah. The guy named Dreyer from Pennsylvania is the one that done that, and we almost threw him overboard behind the. Behind the powder, but it's a
lot of fun words involved in that exchange, I'll bet.
Well below decks. But I just can't believe, and I don't care who knows it, anybody that would be for McCain and say that they have common horse sense has been kissing the wrong end of a jackass. That's all I can say about him. You could have told me that McCain would have been running. In fact, you and I talked, and I told you that Obama would beat him by 15 or 20 points. And I still think before it's over and the ones that's undecided, I think if they got any sense at all, and right now, you know, I'm prejudiced to a degree, but I'm not that prejudiced not to vote for McCain, and anybody that would, because they were so strong for Hillary, that would go McCain, they ought to go withdraw their registration. That they're in pitiful shape. You know, I'd like to be able to stand up on national television and tell them what I really think of people that is that ignorant. And I don't think ignorance is really the name for it. It's worse than that. Ignorance is just not knowing. They're in a worse shape than not knowing. They're below learning because they've got the living picture right before them in the White House right now. And that's what we're looking at it when we look at McCain. So I am just very disappointed in this 2 or 3 point difference in.
But it may, you know, what you pointed out though, Ed, is very much true. That may be dodgy. There may not be any truth to that. Because some of the things that are pointed out, the pollsters, young people with cell phones, if they should even happen to be polled, they're young people and they're likely to say, you know, why don't you blah blah, you know, put it blah blah, you know, and not participate in the polls if they're getting called. There is a ton of data to suggest that the polling companies deliberately skew the nature of the polling in order to make it more palatable, because they got a vested interest, Ed, in having themselves a horse race.
Yeah.
They get paid for these polls, and nobody's going to pay attention to them.
I was going
to
say it's all about money. But you know what? If those polls were taken in Long Island or out where Regis lives and Kathy Lee and all these rock stars in Connecticut and those places, if those polls were pulled out there, you know what the percentage is going to be. But, you know, I haven't had but one call politically in 2 years. And where are the calls down here? You don't hear nobody saying about getting a call about a poll.
Well, see, I don't think they're polling around here, Ed, because it's taken as a foregone conclusion that McCain wins West Virginia.
Are you kidding?
No!
Well, to my fellow West Virginians, pull your head out of your butt, you know, because anybody that, you know, that would be that stupid, as poor as we are, and as coal-ridden, you know, so committed to coal instead of alternative, and to coal cleanification, you know, I don't know. It's just beyond description to me. I can't imagine people that's been through what West Virginians have been through and how poor they are.
Well, Ed, do you remember back in the days of me doing radio in Beckley? You remember that remember that fella named Clyde from Fayette County that used to call in once in a while? Didn't hear from him a lot, but he'd call in once in a while.
No.
And well, he pointed out to me. He said I've been playing politics in West Virginia for a long time. And he said, Bob, you need to understand something. The only Democrat that a Manchin has ever voted for has been named Manchin. And Joe Manchin is the head of the Democratic Party in West Virginia. Now, how many times have you seen Joe Manchin come out and get behind Obama?
None.
How hard did Joe Manchin stump for John Kerry?
I don't know that he did.
That's the answer that wins the prize. He didn't. Okay, Joe Manchin is the head of the Democratic Party in West Virginia, and the Democratic Party in West Virginia is going to do as little to elect Joe Manchin, or as little to elect Barack Obama, as it can and still be considered Democratic.
But let me tell you the whole picture, Bob. When you get down there, I lobbied down there for the UAW. When you get down there, you've got the Shirley Love, the David Perrys, and the Bob Kisses, and all that, half of that group from Raleigh County, and the others too, I don't really believe that they know the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, because just about 3/4 of those people are genuine Republicans. Look at Shirley Love, $79,000 he took from coal, timber, and gas. And, well, who do you think he was committed to? How about Bob Kiss? Look at the benefits he reaped from it.
Well, that man was a registered Republican when he lived in Ohio before he came to West Virginia.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bob, I didn't know that. But you didn't have to tell me he was a Republican.
Didn't exactly have to get the slide rule out to figure that out, did you?
No. And you know what? The other part of it is I was down there and I watched him, and I watched a guy they call Big Daddy Lipskin for the coal company carried a roll in each pocket of $100 bills that looked like he had baseballs in his front pocket. You know, and that night, do you think that even the delegates from this county, do you think there was one of them that come and associated with the labor group? The rest of them was partying with the coal executives and their women. I know what I'm talking about. I was there.
Oh, yes.
And the Heart of Town Motel, had a string of women come in there to keep those delegates entertained. They reaped the benefits for a while, but living with what they are and looking in the mirror should mean something. Because, you know, unless you're blind, you have to look your face in the morning, and if I was as low life as some of them, I couldn't do that. I'm afraid that I was never did have that trait in me at all. And it's, they can write that on the tombstone, and I dare anybody to challenge me on positions that I took. Because any position I took was for the working class man, and it will be forever. And like the guy said, that'll be my theme and glory. That I stood up for the working class people. And I'm not talking about middle class. I'm talking about all classes of workers. That's us polar bears at punch at time clock. So but I know what's in Charleston. And
what's in Charleston, and this is the important part of it, Ed, what's in Charleston is not, maybe it's different by virtue of who's doing the payoffs. In Charleston, it's, mostly people with coal cash.
Oh, yeah.
But it ain't no different than what goes on in Columbus or what goes on in Harrisburg or what goes on in Frankfort or Richmond, because it's the effects of dirty, dirty cash on the political process.
Well, and one place may be coal, another it's oil, another it's just control and power. And for each state may have a different cause, but
in Delaware it's the banking industry.
All about cash.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
In Delaware it's the banking industry. It goes on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Timber interests in Alabama. You know, the sugar cartels in Florida. Yeah. It goes on. Sure. Wherever, and this is the thing, Ed, wherever there is a lobbyist with a wad of cash to give out, as sure as God made little green apples, politicians are going to grow up around him saying, gimme.
Yeah, and Bob, it's worse than just cash.
Oh, sure, it's the booze, it's the shrimp, hookers, the works.
Yeah, well, some of them ain't even hookers. Some of them do that.
For free?
They think they're going somewhere. You know, you got to start with, you got plenty of stupid men, you got a few stupid women.
Well, you remember when, Don Blankenship and Spike Maynard got caught, swanning around the French Riviera? They tried to interview that woman that was with either Spike or Blankenship, and she said, you know, I don't remember what they talked about. I just had to go to the ladies' room real bad.
Real dingbat.
Yeah. She wasn't there for her lucid commentary on the exquisite architecture of the Principality of Monaco.
Right. Well, you remember, what was her name, Rice, that was with...
Donna Rice, sure.
I mean, that was all free. You know, I mean, she thought she was going somewhere. But women like that is on the dead-end street. Most guys, when it comes right down to it, it's just like Edwards. Do you think that woman's going to go anywhere with him? Even if his wife passed on. That relationship, the exposure ended it. And that's just the same thing as when two people are going together behind their spouse's back. When one shoots the other one, I'm talking about one spouse shoots the other one, thinking they're going to wind up with that one, it's eternal breakup because both of them wind up in prison. So it's the same thing, same comparison. It's a dead-end streak. And the thing of it is, there's a lot of people, or one-way street, whatever you want to call it. But the thing of it is, there's a lot of people traveling. But it eventually catch up some way.
It seems like every time it tries to catch up with McCain, there's somebody, you know, like Fox News out there, telling you that it's the exact opposite way. For instance, Ed, and I know you'll get a giggle out of this, you know, John McCain can't remember how many mansions he owns.
Seven, I think.
And worth $17 million or something like that. He can't remember how many mansions he owns. He can't remember what kind of Cadillac he drives. He wears $1,000 shoes. And Obama is the elitist. So today on Fox News, that little blowhard Neil Cavuto.
I won't stop on Fox News.
I know the feeling. I don't either. But I do know who some of these people are. You know, Neil Cavuto. Cavuto, that sounds like something that happens to you after you eat something bad at the restaurants. I got the Cavutos.
Yeah.
But anyway, at Neil Cavuto, on his show, when he started talking about, he started hammering on Obama for bringing up the fact that McCain can't recall how many mansions he owns. You know how they put the graphics up underneath the talking heads? You know what Fox put up during that? Okay, here it is. Is Obama bashing the American dream by bashing McCain's seven homes?
I'm not sure that's an American dream.
You know, I'll tell you what, it's not my American dream because I can't make...
illusionary scenario. You know, have you... I have thought that I'd like to have a cabin of some kind out in the woods away from everything, but seven homes, my gosh. And think about, of course, that is good for unemployment, the maintenance of them. And,
they're paying undocumented aliens to keep it up. You can bet that's the next thing. You got to catch them doing that. But you know, I know how hard you work around your house. It's tough enough maintaining one home. I don't even want to think about what it's like trying to run seven.
Yeah, it takes me 8 hours to do the grass and the trimming. You're right. And that's not counting the other maintenance around the house.
And, you know, that's one other thing, Ed. If McCain was such a great pilot, even when he was a younger man, why didn't he fly his own aircraft? You know, there's Cindy, and she's, you know, she doesn't have a jet. She has jets. And he has never been seen to get in the cockpit of one of those or try to get checked out in one.
Who did you say?
McCain.
Yep, the other person.
His wife, Cindy.
Oh, she can fly?
No, she just owns several jets.
Yeah.
And he's never tried to fly one. Never shown any interest in it. Gotta wonder.
I don't blame him with his track record. I wouldn't get in one.
Well, exactly. And that's what I'm getting at. The guy crashed five jets. He's an incompetent. Ed, this is the thing that just blows me away. If you were to just sort of ask most of the people in this state, they'd probably tell you that voting for George Bush has been a mistake. And George Bush is a mighty dim bulb. I mean, there's only, what, 20% of America that still thinks he's doing a good job?
Mm-hmm, 29, I think.
Well, John McCain is actually going to turn out to be dumber than George Bush.
Impossible.
No, sir. I tell you, I will...
And that's not defending McCain.
I'll bet you lunch at Tudor's that if it comes to pass, John McCain is dumber than George Bush.
Both of them together wouldn't have a good IQ, I doubt.
Oh, both of them together couldn't figure out how to work a wheelbarrow, but... But that's where we are. And there's very few of us that are talking that plain. John McCain is not very smart. And after 8 years at George Bush, we got to have somebody smart. We need a smart guy or a smart woman. And Obama is a smart guy. I'm voting for the smart guy. You know, I got to say, you know, if the Democratic Party was running some sort of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, chuckle-headed idiot, I'd probably stay home. But yeah. But Obama does give me a little bit of hope because he's intelligent.
Well.
And right now, intelligence has got a premium on it.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. But I when I look at McCain, I see a high-tempered, quick decision without thought.
Shoot first and ask questions later.
Yeah. And
spoiled that, rotten.
That kind of a person reminds me of me when I was 16. But, you know, you get past that as the years go on. And it's got me... doubting my ability to judge politics now because I just knew. Well, I thought, too, that Hillary had it locked up once, but it wasn't. So I've made two mistakes for sure in politics, unless these independents and so forth come on across, and that Hillary and Bill Clinton can sway that. Sway the bunch it was for her, because if they can just get three-fourths of the people behind Obama that she had behind her, we have got it locked up.
Well, but let me tell you a little something about the Hillary voters. There's been some polling done of them. Only 52% or so, if I recall correctly, Ed. Only 52% or so say that there's no doubt that they will vote for Barack Obama. There's another 24% or so that say that they are definitely going to vote for John McCain.
See, that's enough to win or lose an election.
Ed, there is a lot of racism left in this country.
Yeah, I know that. I know that better than... and I would say openly that I would rather have a white that had the same qualifications as Obama's got to run. And I'd have the people know that that's not me going against Obama and not voting for him in any form.
No, that's you. No, that's you recognizing the political realities in this country. That exists, the racism that's in this country.
Yeah, and it's an admission of my own racism. Because when you say if a person has identical qualifications, but because he's black, I'm not going to vote for him, that's pure discrimination. I don't care in racism. I don't care how you put it. And that is where I'm at. But I've got to say, a couple people I've known in the last couple of years have have thrown me off kilter a little bit and leaning where I got about a half cent, I think. At least I recognize, and you know, no, I don't think I'd ever been dumb enough to vote for McCain, even before I talked to some of the people that I've talked to about racism and so forth. I'm still not for some stuff that goes on, but that don't have nothing to do with being the voting for president, because I'd vote for Obama 10 times before I'd give McCain a half a vote.
Yeah, because, again, because we've seen what 8 years of, I mean, look, this entire country has been defined by white guys in the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Obama can't do any worse.
No, I mean.
You know, I mean, that's a hell of a way to look at things, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, does anybody out there think that Barack Obama could do worse than George W. Bush? It's impossible.
I think it,
John McCain could do worse.
Man, to be able to plan to do as bad as he's done.
But John McCain could do worse because John McCain wants to pick up where Bush leaves off.
Mm.
And if we don't get some relief from George Bush pretty darn quick, we're in the soup and the soup is boiling.
Yeah. Well, McCain is starting to change his tune just a little bit and lean toward getting the troops out. And they're doing a lot of stuff right now, and more of it's going to come out before November. But one of them is the pressure that the Democrats in these 12 hearings that they've had has pressured the oil company. The oil company is not generous to drop these oil prices, and people are still, or at least here they are, they're still driving the same amount. I see what they're doing, and the speeding and all the rest that goes with it hasn't changed enough to justify this drop in oil. It's because of the Democratic Party. They're scared to death of what kind of hot water they're going to be in my opinion, before it's over. And the investigations they've had has put the heat on them. The American public is fed up with it. And so that's one of the things that that Congress has done. And I sure ain't hoorah on Congress. I think they could have done 90% better than what they have done. But of course that veto pen, they knew a big fight, and a big part of it was that. But before it's, I just hope they drag us out long enough and don't put Karl Rove on trial until after the election, after that's over, so Bush can't pardon him. What are you laughing at?
Not just the idea of, please, let's not screw ourselves till after. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are things that work to. And, I would just assume that some other country indicted Karl Rove for war crimes and had him arrested on one of his little international jaunts and took him to The Hague. And, you can't blame the Democrats for that.
Yeah. Where was this at now?
No, I said I wish they would.
Oh!
You know, last time when he was supposed to appear in Congress, did you notice that, Ed? When he was under subpoena to appear in Congress and testify that he was actually over in Georgia, helped getting the war going.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not speculation. That's really it.
Yeah.
Karl Rove went to the Caucasus and ginned him up a war. It's amazing.
You're talking about filthy, low-life scum. And you call them.
Well, you're giving it. If you're using that in reference to Karl Rove, you're giving scum a bad name.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, the Republicans. You wonder what percentage of this 29% are genuine Republicans, and how many of them are fools? They have to be one or the other. If they're for George Bush and still a Democrat, they're a fool of a Democrat, not a good Democrat. But of course, their philosophy is don't say nothing about another Republican. And I'm telling you, it's, they've got not just it'd be bad enough if they affected our country, but they've affected the whole world.
Infected the whole world, Ed.
Yeah, and I'm telling
they're a sickness.
When I was in France and Glasgow, Scotland, and these other countries, we got the red carpet rolled out there. And now, you know, and it's rumors, you know, it's people say they've been there. They act like Americans are a displaced dog or something.
That's what 8 years of a Bush will do to you.
And it'll take a few years to straighten this out and get it back on track too. And the attitude that the Republicans has got, let them come to us. We're the superpower. You know, we're not going to go to them and talk to them. You know, this thing, if Iran would have been treated right and the circumstances would have been handled right, we wouldn't be in the clash with them that we are on the verge of right now. And it wouldn't surprise me that they aren't deliberately going to start something before this is over.
It remains to be seen. You know, I'm sure that Dick Cheney is still sitting there rubbing his the dirty little bionic hands together saying, Iran, Iran, I want to kill Iran.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
Well, Ed, it's awful good to talk to you, my friend. You want me to put you back on hold?
Sure.
All right. Good talking
to you.
I'll
see you later. Everybody, we said hi.
Sure will, and you say hi to Dreamin'. Have a great weekend, all right?
All right, and you too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
And let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Chris, what's up, man?
You know, it's got to be Lieberman.
For McCain?
Yeah, it's got to be Lieberman.
Yeah, that's not what they're saying.
Every press conference, Lieberman's got to be there to help them pronounce things and go, no, that's not the talking point, remember?
Yeah, or whisper in his ear, not that, Georgia. Not the one with Savannah in it, the one with Tbilisi.
Yeah, I remember all those press conferences. Lieberman would be there as his handler.
Yeah. Just can't get along. But I mean, you know that everything out there right now, right-wing freak Mark Halperin it's got to be Romney. It's going to be Romney. Got to be Romney.
No.
I don't see how it could be Romney.
I've already had my bucket of lye out for a while now.
Yeah, I know. Pluck your eyeballs out, dip your head in, and walk off the cliff.
Yeah, running rabbits, baby. It's got to be Lieberman. I think it's going to be Lieberman and Biden.
See, I'm still holding out dark horse hope for Mike Huckabee.
That would be cool.
He says no way. I mean, frankly, Romney would be a gift.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because even the fundamentalists, the fundamentalists would lose their tiny little microscopic pea-sized minds.
They don't stay home.
Hell of a lot of truth in that.
Huh?
Hell of a lot of truth in that.
Oh, they don't stay home. They would all stay home.
Because, you know, them Mormons, they ain't really Christians. They're cult members.
I'd hate to think what they're doing at home, but... They don't stay home. Did you get that email? I don't know if you got that email I sent today. I was watching the direct feed on CNN.com. They had one of Biden's house, and they had one of Bayh's house. Evan Bayh.
Oh, yeah, they've got him staked out. I saw that at the CNN website earlier.
Yeah, I was watching Biden's house. I was watching both of them off and on. It was more activity of the press corps at Biden's house. And this white SUV, Grand Cherokee, comes speeding into the gate. And I swear to you, not 4 minutes after that, here comes pizza delivery. And the girl comes walking up there, and the press corps goes, oh, yeah, pizza delivery. Pizza delivery! Cameras!
They're reporting on the pizza now. Presidential pizza.
So So she
team walks, coverage.
Yeah, she walks through the press, a little bit through the press corps. Press corps, we're press corps. Look at us, we're press corps. And she walks all the way down there to Biden's gate, which I guess directs her to the house. She comes, eventually she walks back out from the house, still carrying the pizzas.
Let's say what?
Yep. Let's interview her. There's no audio. Obviously it was a prank. But, look, I mean, it's just amazing. SUV arrives, boom, four, like,
barely. Oh, you're lucky there wasn't helicopter video.
No. Barely 4 minutes after that SUV arrives, here comes this girl. If it was a prank, it was the most well-timed prank I've ever seen in my life. Because she eventually doesn't deliver the pizzas. But the biggest thing is, the press corps doesn't buy the pizzas off of her.
Cheap bastards.
Huh?
Cheap bastards.
I'm telling you, cheap bastards. The press corps, ooh, pizza. That was amazing.
Nah, it's got anchovies. I don't do anchovies.
Maybe it didn't have anchovies.
Well, there's that.
There's really one big chick. So I was amazed. Maybe it didn't have breadsticks.
I want my cinnamon dunking sticks.
Maybe they'd all done stories on Domino's. Maybe they knew something we didn't.
Oh, brother.
I worked for 3 days at Pizza Hut about 20 years ago.
Yeah. Had a cup of coffee with Pizza Hut, did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a good story. It's there's nothing vulgar in it. But one of the second day that I was there, this guy's working and his girlfriend comes in with another guy to the place where he works.
No, that ain't gonna end well.
It didn't. The middle wasn't well. They go in and they sit down and they order a pizza pie. He goes, "I'll fix it."
Oh dear.
You
want to guess? No more detail than that, please.
Well, he just swept the floor.
Yeah, I'll bet he did.
He swept the floor and put it on there, and then
whoops! There goes the crust.
Great, huh?
Yeah.
They said it was great.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
Oh Lord, you doing all right, brother?
I'm still having seizures.
Oh man.
Yeah, well.
You controlling it with medicine or anything? You able to get the medicine?
I'm able to get the medicine, and it's helping. I had one 2 days ago, but it was in my sleep. My wife told me about it. I had it in my sleep, didn't wake up, and went back to sleep after I had it. I wound up at the hospital a while back after I had one, and That's never a good thing because you wind up in the ambulance, strapped to a board, and then they don't take you off the board until they're done at the hospital. So I wound up strapped on a board for 3 hours.
Ugh.
And if you've got a bad back after you've had a seizure, the last thing you want is to be strapped to a board.
Well, and I mean, literally, don't your muscles sort of go through hell in that process, too?
Pure hell. Absolutely.
Well, thank God we've got the best medical system that money can buy in America, huh, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We could go on about health care in Congress.
Well, brother, take care. Good to hear from you.
All righty, and I'll tell you what.
School's already started down there, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got to brag on my girl. Last year, Carrie graduated to sixth grade. She got the President's Award. Only three kids in the school got it. And it had a little signature from George W. on it, which we can overlook that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know.
But she made straight A's. And she's in the seventh grade this year in advanced classes. So what are you going to do?
Hey, you know what? She's a mighty sweet little girl. Mighty smart one, too.
And those little loved ones of yours, I tell you what.
Well, Ferg's playing his first season of football in middle school, so it's some big changes going on.
How's that dear sweet Agnes?
She's doing okay. You know, we just had a visit from my very, very dear sister and my brother-in-law and had three and a half days of a really wonderful time with them. And Agnes just enjoyed the heck out of it. And the thing is, she went and watched football practice today, and I haven't gotten a report yet because I had to be behind the board here. I've been doing the football practice with Ferg, and I came in the other day and I said, you know, I don't feel real good about you going to practice because the first time you see Ferg get really jacked up, you're going to go out and get yourself arrested trying to, you know, how dare you? And I said, now, honey, it's football.
Well, folks, if anyone that don't know Agnes, she's a fiery gal.
She is, in the words of a very dear friend of mine, that red-headed hellcat.
She is something else, and I love her to death.
Force of nature, Chris. Force of nature.
Force of nature. She is. Yes, she is. And she's a perfect match for you.
A match? Oh no! I'm beat. I'm lit. It ain't no match. It, you know, no. I'm definitely. Yeah.
All right.
Chris, we'll talk to you later, brother. Say hi to everybody down there for me.
I will.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we'll keep it rolling along. Hey, you guys are lighting up the lights early in the program on a Friday. Little golf clap. This is great. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Alan. What's up?
Oh, okay. How about...
Doing pretty good. Two sort of Alabama phone calls in a row. This is cool.
Oh, great. I was just going to ask you, do you know how many houses you have?
Yeah, seven. No, how many he how many I have or how many he has?
How many do you have? Would you have to get back with me on that?
Yeah, let me get back with you on that. We got to figure out whether or not I'm going to count my dad's house, seeing how they're trying to, you know, foreclose on it and stuff.
Yeah. I was just listening. I was wondering if I actually heard what I heard. That Georgia went into South Ossetia against the U.S.
I'm sorry, I lost you there. I think you were breaking up a little bit, Alan.
He said that Georgia went into South Ossetia.
Uh-huh. For some reason, I think you got a bad connection there because I get like every third word.
Okay. Yeah.
I tell you what, try back, would you? All right. Well, Alan, we'll talk soon. Try back, and hopefully I'll catch you later on in the show. All right.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. I hate it when that happens, but you know that's the miracle of modern communications. Let's keep it going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well.
We sure lit it up last week. I got to tell you.
Yeah, I enjoyed that definitely. Well, I was just going to let you know that Denver's kind of starting to buzz about the convention and. You know, people are getting excited. Again, I'm sorry things didn't work out for you, but I think that's fantastic that you're sending out feelers regarding other conferences and so forth.
And I think good things are going to start to happen. And it's worth mentioning. You know, I guess I was being a little bit of an egomaniac, Preston. Mark Levine and Guy James are going to be out there.
That's great.
They're going to be inside the Pepsi Center. My whole thing was that. I wanted to be outside the Pepsi Center and marching down to the free speech cages to give those people a voice.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to have one. I mean, they've already created one. I think just in the process of, you know, kind of building up to this, putting their names out there, doing press conferences, calling into radio stations, and so forth. And I think they'll continue to have a voice. It's been interesting. And a lot of the media chatter leading up to the convention, the way some have tried to create a negative perception of the whole event about risks and, you know, potential catastrophes and disruptions and nefarious things from the protesters, like, you know, just on and on.
Well,
and on.
I mean, do you take seriously that whole thing, that sort of story that broke yesterday, that, well, the McCain headquarters in Denver received a suspicious envelope with white powder in it?
Right.
Well, there was the white powder certainly wasn't anything poisonous. I think it might have been an envelope full of, you know, cornstarch, you know, Argo's finest.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that maybe a prisoner sent that or something. You know, that happens from time to time where I work, actually. I work with the Department of Revenue and with the state of Colorado. And there are a lot of, you know, very virulent anti-tax people out there.
Oh, where you are, that I'd say there's more anti-tax than pro.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly I don't want our money wasted on stuff, but, you know, I think taxes have served a very helpful causes, you know?
Well, gosh, I mean, there ain't no such, you know, one of the oldest tenets of any sort of civilized society, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Yep.
You want roads, you got to pay for them.
You want clean water?
Pay for it.
Yep. You know, higher education and, you know, the way taxes contribute to our economy. You know, they try to, the wealthy try to portray themselves as, you know, lone Ayn Randian, you know, geniuses who created all the wealth. But so many times it's been public investment for decades and research and development are, you know, welfare getting off of public land so often. And, you know, here in Colorado, some of the big corporate players are like Newmont Mining and Lockheed Martin.
Sure.
I mean.
Well, and look at the firestorm that was created right there where you are when old 894 came out and said that he wanted to renegotiate the 1922 Colorado River Water Compact.
Yep.
All of a sudden, a retiring or retired Republican senator from Colorado and currently serving Ken Salazar both came out and said, yeah, that's going to happen over my dead body.
That's right. That's right. So,
because, you know, water's serious business out there. And it's one of the, it's one of those things where I think if we could do it in a, if we knew someone or had the wherewithal or the means to do it, we could put together some really, really common ground between folks out there and folks back here. Because, see, here in West Virginia and in the Appalachians, Preston, we are literally the wellspring of the east of the southeastern and eastern United States. Most of the waters rise here in the Appalachians. I don't mean West Virginia, but in the Appalachians themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The Allegheny rises in the Appalachians in New York and flows through Pennsylvania, joins up with the Monongahela, which rises in West Virginia, forms the Ohio, which feeds the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the New and the New and the Gauley join to form the Kanawha, which feeds the Ohio. And then there's all the Appalachian streams that feed and create the Tennessee River. The water issues are critical here.
They are, and it's great that you're aware of the, you know, water systems around you. You know, the issue of dams is a huge issue. And dams around the world, huge battles are being fought in places like Brazil where they're trying to build some new mega dams. You know, we already have like 20,000 of these things and, you know, it's such a mess. Another subsidy, once again, to big business developing these dams. They're often made through public investment, yet the public knows very little about what they're doing and what the purpose of these dams are. You know, usually it's for more resource extraction and the population seeing very little of the wealth being taken out of their land. So, yeah, we've got Newmont Mining. I don't know if, have you ever heard of Koch Industries by chance? It's K-O-C-H.
Yes, but not enough to, speak intelligently about them.
Well, real briefly, it's one of the largest privately held corporations in the world, if not the largest. It doesn't, it's not available. You can't buy it stock. It's privately held. And absolutely massive industry involved with mining and all sorts of, you know, different industries. And they've been funding a lot of the so-called free market think tanks that have so deceived people about how our economy functions. And, you know, all this mythology about getting government out of the way and no regulations and all this stuff. They actually were fined, one of the largest fines in U.S. history, for a huge spill of benzene, which causes cancer. And, you know, of course, they can't stand that, and it's one of those terrible regulations. So, anyway, they've been funding these free market think tanks, and huge player. The CEO wrote a book called The Science of Management, and he's a figure we might want to think about. I forget his name offhand, but anyway, I didn't want to get too far afield regarding McCain and the convention. The chatter leading up to the convention, though, it's very reminiscent of what was going on during labor strikes in an earlier period. There'd be all this talk about outside agitators are coming in to disrupt.
Oh, that, yeah, that's what the, yeah, and during the civil rights, why do these outside agitators got to come here? It ain't none of their business.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you getting that in Denver now?
We've been getting it for weeks and weeks and weeks. I mean, kind of nonstop. And it's really, you know, people I work with, their concern and their worry over the convention, it's striking. But nevertheless, I think people are still getting excited about it to some degree. Somebody I work with is going to be working, you know, doing volunteer work with the DNC. Other friends of mine are excited about Public Enemy coming here to do a performance of music.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's due very much to the work of Recreate 68, and activists like that. They're also bringing Cindy Sheehan and Ramona Africa, serious committed activists. And, it's good to see Ralph Nader is going to be coming out doing his thing.
Yeah, he's got some sort of a stadium or arena sort of event, scheduled out that way, doesn't he?
Yeah. He does. And again, it's the same argument he's been making, you know, keep the debates open. And,
you know, I didn't mean to piss the guy off, but I got into a little bit of a discussion, over on one of the threads at Alternet about it, because there was talk about the whole big tent thing and the Stars green room that's going to be going on there. And it just kind of, it's like, oh my God, who's going to be there? Okay, I don't want to run the risk of this sounding like sour grapes because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But with everything I went through trying to get us into the big tent so that we could do that outside reporting we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
and I'm okay with it. I've come to terms with it. I kept in the back of my mind going, you know, Jesus, why can't I even get an email returned?
Yeah.
Why can't I get a phone call returned? Well, I found out, Preston.
What's up?
Yesterday it was announced that Air America will have a gala event inside the Big Tent on Monday. And Tom Hartman and Rachel Maddow are going to be there, and new Air America president and CEO, Charlie Kiriker. Because they became what the guy who wrote to me called a significant sponsor.
Oh, I see. And it's too bad that came with kind of exclusive rights or something.
Yeah, pay to play, baby.
You know, and I'm afraid you're going to run into a lot of that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, welcome. Yeah, welcome to the, here's the new media, same as the old media.
Yeah. And, you know, at other events, you'd think they'd welcome as many media voices as possible, especially from the grassroots. You know, that's a shame. I'm sure Air America will do a good job with it.
Yeah, I'm not gooning on any of the people at Air America.
Yeah.
I'm gooning on this idea that apparently our side has been infected by this notion that, it's like that motto out of Highlander, there can be only one. No! If our side adopts that position, Preston, we're screwed before we get out of the gate. You know, I know this may sound contrary to my own or this network's well-being, But I would be fine, I would be happy with it if there were a dozen horns out there.
Right.
Because I'm ideologically and philosophically into changing the tenor of the and the tone and the content of the message.
Yep. Yep.
And so this exclusivity stuff, not so much. This business of, you know, oh, well, you know, we're going to have beautiful people. I don't want to hang out with beautiful people. I want to hang out with people that know what beans and how to make a decent pot of beans and cornbread. And talk about what it means to be a working, means to be working people. Because those people, Preston, at the risk of me getting on my soapbox, those folks are the ones who are going to solve the Democratic Party's problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bob Schrum is not going to solve the Democratic Party's problems. And neither, to be quite honest, is Arianna Huffington. And neither is, neither are any of the so-called celebrities. It's the people who work solutions from the grassroots, from the ground up, who will change the demographic face of Democratic Party politics and make us viable in places where we have been deemed not to.
I agree. David Sirota, in a column on Common Dreams today, mentioned a book called Bad for Democracy, How the Presidency Undermines the Power of the People. And I didn't get to read the whole...
I saw a little bit of it. I didn't finish it either.
Yeah.
But generally, if David Sirota writes it, I at least try to read it.
Yeah. He's a good guy. And but I think it speaks to what you just mentioned. You know, we can't keep conferring or, you know, kind of handing our power off over to some other figure out there who will do things for us. It's going to very much going to be, you know, what people do. And, you know, sometimes seemingly insignificant actions taken on a regular basis, like handing over a DVD to someone you work with. I've been doing that a lot, and I notice how uncomfortable that can be at times, because it's always like, oh, boy, how's this person going to react to this? Or, you know, are they even going to check it out? Or, you know, and on and on and on, things that divide us in a way. But, you know, still making an effort to pass things around. You know, ABC and CBS and all of them, they're going to do their thing. But what are we doing as individuals and as people with access to alternative views that we can share? And I think it can make a big difference. I did want to disagree with you on one thing I heard you say earlier this week, and you were talking about the kind of futility of calling up radio stations and complaining to their advertisers if they're doing a lot of right-wing stuff. Actually, in a way, I agree with you. I think there are some advertisers and station people that are like, who cares? You know, we want to piss you off, whatever.
Well, and before you go any further, and I don't want to ruin your train of thought, but just for clarity, what my position is that if you want to make a difference in these right-wing hate mongers, you're going to have more luck going to the advertisers than you are going to the station management.
Yeah.
And I know this by dint of experience as opposed to, you know, conjecture. Because station managers love it when people who are really hot under the collar call and say, I ain't never going to listen to your station again. That dirty so-and-so said blah, 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 blah. And, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. And then they hang up the phone and they go, oh, God, he listens 8 hours a day.
Okay.
Now, with the advertisers, however, especially ones who are who sell to liberals as well, you know, who aren't hustling, you know, herbal baldness cures, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fred's Texaco on the corner, free car wash with Philip on Fridays. You call Fred's Texaco and say, listen, I heard you advertise during a right-wing hate monger, and I just want you to know that as long as you're doing business with that radio station, me and mine and everybody I can tell are going to keep driving past Fred's Texaco.
Yeah.
That guy's going to take that seriously.
Yeah. And then I think there will be some advertisers that are like, screw you, you wouldn't bother diamonds anyway or whatever. But yeah, it varies. And sometimes, calling those advertisers can make a big difference. I know that CARE, that Council on,
Council on, American Islamic Relations.
Yeah. they pressured a lot of advertisers regarding Michael Savage recently, and they got a couple to pull their advertising from his show. So congratulations to them. And they're always getting condemned by the right-wing radio hosts.
Oh, Savage hates them.
Savage, Dennis Prager, a whole slew of them. And again, they see their activism as being very effective. And also they're countering the dehumanization campaign they've been running for so long. So, you know, here and there, it can be effective. But even back to the calling the station itself, you know, I think there's a lot of that reaction that you've seen. But I think also they take it as like a public opinion poll. I think there are others that kind of monitor it a little bit more closely. And I can almost hear it in Sean Hannity's voice, the sorts of criticisms that he receives. And I think when they're being kind of flooded by negative calls, I don't know, I think it kind of makes them nervous that they're losing control of what they call the public mind.
Well, yeah, they know it, but you have to, and I'm not being critical here, but you have to speculate on that. You think you hear it in Hannity's voice.
Yeah, yeah.
But, some of this is just based on my own experience. If I wanted to do it, Preston, and this was very expensive for us to purchase back when we thought we were going on to terrestrial radio, because it's one of those gotta have it kind of things. I've got a device here in front of me that cost about $3,000 3 years ago that gives me 40 seconds worth of time travel. And if a right-winger calls in and says, "You're wrong, Bob," and then just quickly hands me my ass, as long as I'm within that 40-second window, I can hit dump, and the guy never existed.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Rush Limbaugh has one that does 3.5 or 4 minutes. So does Hannity.
Yeah. Yeah, amazingly, though, every once in a while,
one sneaks through.
Yeah, and they often make it count. In fact, just this past weekend, one of the most restricted conversations hosted by Billy Cunningham, who took Matt Drudge's place, a guy called in about universal health care, and he was right on, and Cunningham threw out the usual counter-arguments, and this guy responded right back, making great points about Medicare, you know, the administrative costs of government insurance versus, you know, the private industries handling it. It was remarkable, and I think that call got through because I think they are being pressured. I think a lot of people are getting sick of it and demanding a little broader conversation. I don't know. Again, I am speculating, and I could.
Well, in another regard, and this is again in your backyard, Preston. That conversation has been squelched in a different direction. Have you followed this business about the city manager of Golden?
No, I haven't.
Okay, the city manager of Golden, Colorado is a man named Mike Bester. And he was having a private backyard barbecue during the convention, an American-style barbecue, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he invited, among other media outlets, Al Jazeera English TV to be there to broadcast interviews of regular Merkins.
Interesting.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Well, they got wind of it, and this past last night, city council meeting there in Golden, they showed up and said, "I can't believe you'd let that Al Jazeera terrorist network into your backyard. What kind of American are you?" So he has disinvited Al Jazeera.
That's a shame. Well, I had heard something about, I hadn't heard that story, but I had heard something about them broadcasting from a place, Al Jazeera, getting a space at the Grizzly Rose, which is like this country western bar. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, wait until they find out about that.
I want them there. That's where I want Al Jazeera,
well,
you know?
Totally. It was a great move, and hopefully, you know, customers or, you know, somebody will get mobilized to chase them out. I'll keep you posted if they could stay there. I'll let you know. But
you know what? We talk about country western. I got a bumper queued up here that I'm going to play in a minute, and it's country. And it's smart country. I mean, it's not, we're going to put a boot in your behind. It's not any of that.
Yeah.
This is smart, smart. This is an artist who writes songs with the name Epictetus in the title, okay? No kidding. I'm gonna play a tune here for the next break, and I hope you still got it on, because I bet you run out and buy the album.
I'll be tuning in for sure. You know, that's another great movement, a real people's country music.
Well, I'm not going to give up until I get this guy on the show, because I want a conversation with this fellow. And who I'm talking about is Rodney Crowell.
You know, there's a magazine that covers some of these alternative country musicians. It's called No Depression.
Used to be. Just published its last issue in June.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And they went to purely an online format, but I'm a huge No Depression fan.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad they're still going to be online at least. A lot of good print publications have folded, but continue online.
And that was the thing. The No Depression circulation had not fallen. Those guys were still kicking ass and taking names, but all the ad revenues, and I hope I'm not speaking too far afield, all the ad revenue had dried up.
And on top of that, postage went up and printing went way up. You know, Time Magazine and these other mega printers get these great breaks on their postage costs, while the smaller ones don't.
Yeah, and that's not an accident.
It sure isn't. It's certainly an attack on freedom of speech, really, when you get down to it. You know, the market forces, free market, nonsense.
You know, I, culturally speaking, and you know how I love to make these weird little otherwise not likely to be made comparisons. I'm beginning to formulate a couple of theories. One of them is that hill folks are hill folks the world over. We don't like to be messed with, and you know, if you do mess with us, we will make life really ugly. Whether that is the Tibetans, or Swiss, or hillbillies, or you know, Western mountain people, or people in the mountains of South Pacific Islands.
Yeah,
we're the same critters.
Yep. People in the Andes fighting Newmont Mining.
Exactly, and by the same token, I think, and you know, I've said in the past, Preston, that if hardcore fundamentalist Muslims ever actually sit down and have a glass of tea and start talking with hardcore right-wing fundamentalist Christians, we're all screwed. Because they're going to find out they've got so much common ground that they've got more in common than they have separate. And mentioning Al Jazeera in the country western bar is the same kind of thing. I mean, if you strip away the costuming, a lot of the rugged individualism that defines the American West is the same rugged individualism that defines nomadic desert peoples. Does that make any sense?
Okay.
And the Bedouin hoedown ain't that far from the out west high plains hoedown neither. Or the Kaylee or any, you know, there are commonalities that we can find, and they're surprising when they dawn on you. Oh, wait, you know, this is not that far from what I experienced back home in my desert. If that makes any sense to you. It's, you know, maybe the music's in a different key, but it's the same music. And so, because, you know, to Arabic peoples, nothing rises to a higher level of art for a variety of reasons than damn good poetry.
That's so true. That's it. That's so true, yep. And I guess in Iran, there's kind of a tradition of people at like a gathering, a dinner or a party or whatever, to sit in a circle and somebody will say a verse from Rumi, and then the person next to that person needs to pick up from that verse and do the next verse of Rumi. I mean, they know this beautiful artwork.
I've got a book of Rumi that I sit around with every now and then, because it's... Well, A, it's a brilliant translation, but B, it's universal.
Yeah, it is.
And it's when we identify those universality. Yeah, identifying universal principles makes war a hell of a lot harder.
Yep.
It's harder to bomb somebody that's human than it is to bomb somebody that has been just sort of categorically dehumanized as those people. You know, my God, this business that Michael Moore quotes out of John McCain's own book, saying, you know, well, if we had fully utilized the air power, we would have won in Vietnam.
Yep. And I think West Virginia's Morgan Spurlock is going to make a big contribution here pretty soon to rehumanizing Arab people. I think he's got a movie coming out called Where is Osama Bin Laden?
Where in the world is Osama Bin Laden? Yeah, and
okay.
Yeah, I read about that. So that's not out yet?
Well, the book is out, but the movie, I think, is just coming out now. He kind of reversed the, usually it's a movie and a book, but anyway, I think the book's out, but yeah, and from what I've read, it sounds really good. I guess he goes to the Middle East and speaks to families and intellectuals and all sorts of people. You know, I'm so fortunate to have this Link TV, and I see these programs on Iran.
Oh, it's got to be marvelous, Link. Yeah.
Yeah, it is for sure. Hey, I want to ask you, did you happen to know what the circulation of No Depression was before they ended the print edition?
I will know the answer to that question probably in the next 5 minutes if a particular listener is still listening. Offhand, I don't know. But
okay.
It was darned respectable.
Yeah.
You know, orders of tens of thousands.
Yeah. And again, that's a part of the media. You know, so often we're going, oh God, the media is so awful. But this is kind of our media. And, you know, there are magazines like, there's a great environmental magazine called Plenty. It has almost 200,000 subscribers. There's a beautiful magazine out of Chapel Hill called The Sun that has about 90,000 subscribers, and Z Magazine and The Progressive and The Nation and Mother Earth News and on and on and on. It's a force, and it's a media to in its own right, a powerful one. And if people, you know, are always wondering what kind of activism they can do, I think subscribing to magazines is a very...
And contributing to them, because it's easier to publish with those kinds of outlets than it is to say, you know, get your op-ed published in the end page of Time.
Yep, yep. And, you know, speaking of good magazines, you and I still need to...
Yeah, we do. And I was remiss last weekend, but with family coming in, things got a little bit hairy, and I apologize for that. But I moved that to the high end of the list for this weekend, I promise, I swear.
And at the same time, it's not a hurry, you know. I mean, there is no deadline, but...
No, but I'm in a hurry.
Okay, I understand that, too. I understand that, too. Well, hey, I want to listen from hear from your other callers, and but I did want to say hello real quick to you.
Well, I'm so glad that you did, Preston. These are always wonderful conversations, and I know it's going to be a zoo in Denver, but I don't know exactly where or how all the broadcasts or the horn is going to come together. But if you get a chance to call in during the week, we're going to have extended coverage. I think I'm actually going to be behind the board here from probably somewhere around 11 a.m. every day to about 2 a.m. Making all the coverage happen Denver to here.
Yeah, that will be a great service, definitely. And yeah, I mean, the expense entailed, if you had come out here, it would have been a huge expense as well. And I'm convinced that you're going to find some great, great things to attend in the near future, if not that.
Oh, I know so. And, you know, we've talked about a couple of them. One of them is in the works right now, but I don't feel real comfortable announcing it until it's official.
Sure, sure.
I felt a draw to Denver because, again, I've got kind of an alternative soul.
Yeah.
And I know that those people are going to be out there, and I really, really wanted to talk to them. And, okay, I admit it, I wanted to try a little fat tire ale, too, because it don't come here. But beyond that, I wanted to – but there are other things that I think are very, very important in terms of how we build this network and how we help other people to access the broadcast medium via this network. And I think that we can do really, really good things. The national meeting, for instance, the national meeting of the Society of Environmental Journalists is coming up in October.
Wow.
And it's down in North Carolina, and I have every reason to believe that I'll be on the air from there, and hopefully with noted environmental journalists from literally all over the country and all over the world every night that I'm there, as well as sitting there and soaking up the information during the day.
Awesome. What city? Do you know what city that's going to be in?
No, I don't. I could guess, but it's not on the tip of my tongue right now. It's too far. October is too far out on the radar for me right now.
Right.
It's on that last ring, and boop. Yeah, no, it's just there. But a lot of the folks from Coal River Mountain Watch are going, and they have kindly invited me to come along as well.
Great, exciting.
So you know that's going to be really cool. That's something else coming up sooner than that. Like I said, a lot of it's funding because gasoline being gasoline, it's tough to get to. But you know, if we can get to places and we can show what we can do, I think folks will realize what it is we're trying to do, Preston, and what this can become.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, again, it's people utilizing it and tuning in, and again, kind of breaking that habit of always saying the media, oh, it's such a terrible thing, and it's actually there's all these wonderful parts of the media out there, and parts that
if we support it, if we access it, if we support it, and if we make it more accessible to more people. I mean, you just named a half a dozen magazines that I'm sure most of the audience has never heard of.
Yeah. I've been so fortunate here. I lived in Boulder for a little while, and they had a bookstore, they still do, called Left Hand Books. People curious, lefthandbooks.org. And it's a collective nonprofit. It's been going for over 20 years, and I volunteered there for a while, and it was a great opportunity to find out about all kinds of magazines and books and small presses. And, luckily we have about a dozen bookstores like that around the country. I think the Rainbow in Madison, Wisconsin, and others. I'm not thinking of them offhand, but a lot of good efforts like that. Oh, there's a great one in Austin, Texas called the Internationalist Bookstore.
I've heard of that one. We've got a very nice one down in Charleston, West Virginia called Taylor's Books.
Great. So we're out there.
Yeah.
We have our communities, and I think as we discover each other, I think, yeah, there's so much.
And the beauty of the Internet is that we can close the distance.
Yep, you bet.
Well, Preston, good talking to you and a wonderful weekend to you, and I will be in touch this weekend, I promise.
Sounds good, Bob.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Preston out in Denver, and I hope he will ring in during the Denver coverage that Guy James and Mark Levine bring, as well as the remote stuff that we continue doing, you know, right here. And I'll tell you what, guys, if you're on hold, please stay that way, sincerely. I hope that you will, because I got to play this. Everything just is just converging to make this an absolute necessity. I already gave it away. Gentleman's name, and he's, God, he's so smart. And the music is so good. Rodney Crowell, from an album called The Outsider. Don't get me started. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob, and I'll be back.
To a boil. God speak my mind. The rich corporations have turned a deaf ear. They don't care who goes hungry. They made that much clear. You see, the trouble with people is we want to believe, but they can't turn a profit without tricks up their sleeves. It's the roofers and truckers, the working class suckers, the firemen and teachers, the soldiers and preachers who shoulder the blows. It comes and it goes. A $6 trillion debt you pay through the nose. I said, don't get me started. I'm a drag when I've had a few drinks. Don't get me started. I don't care what anyone thinks, cause it makes me
ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, back to the phone in just a minute, but I'll tell you what. When the show's over and I kick back, I'm putting that whole Rodney Crowell album on and just letting it roll. Just let it wash over me. The Outsider, a 2005 release. Amazing. Listen to that kind of stuff all night long. No doubt. And a couple of emails, and then we go right back to the phones. I promise. Our critic at large, Reverbo, based on the conversation regarding periodicals some folks may not have heard of, adds in, these might be right down their alley, Sled Commander, Modern Water Cooler, and one of my favorites, Fried Food Lover. Signs off, Reverbo, critic at large. Keep it personal. Make it personal. This is just spending another Friday night with the horn, waiting for the vitamins to kick in. Hear, hear. Hear, hear. And, let's see. Let's go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hey, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up, man?
Yeah, it looked like it may be Biden.
Well, yeah, I just saw that Kane and Bi are out of the running.
Yeah, me personally, it's a good choice because of the foreign policy thing, which they're going to try and attack him on. But I just don't think, I'm worried about the South because they want their own. I would have preferred Kane.
No, but wait. Virginia was reasonably in play. Florida is reasonably in play based on some information I received last night. Our buddy David in South Carolina sent it along. Only in Florida, Georgia, Virginia, and one other southern state is Obama within striking distance. So Kane, we're talking about within striking. I mean, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, places like that. Obama is 25 points behind McCain. So, maybe Kane could have delivered Virginia, but little else.
Yeah, I guess so. Like I said to Guy James yesterday, is that as of right now, Obama only has to win one swing state, which is Ohio, Colorado. The swing states are Ohio, Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, while McCain has to win three. Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm sorry. I didn't think you had... I don't think Biden's he's not a lead pipe cinch yet, okay?
No, I didn't say he was a stinker, but I'm concerned about the South as far as, it would have solidified Virginia definitely. And then all he would have had to do was just win either Ohio, Nevada, Colorado, and New Mexico.
And but bear in mind, I saw the darndest thing at CNN earlier today. There's this obscure congressman from Texas that said he'd also been vetted for vice president. Chet something.
Oh, the one who's in Bush's home district.
I think so.
He's a Democrat?
I believe so.
Oh, wow. So, like, Bush's neighbors have more than he does.
And then, lo and behold, there it is. I just checked over there. From CNN's political ticker headline, did Clinton get snubbed? Two prominent Democrats close to Hillary Clinton expressed frustration Friday over a report Barack Obama's campaign never formally vetted the New York senator for the vice presidential spot. These are, of course, Paul Begala and James Carville.
Oh, boy.
And without seeming to be too much of an ass, I lost all respect for James Carville over that when they wrote that please don't send Mr. Scooter to prison letter after Scooter Libby got convicted at trial. That just sort of went to show me where the loyalties really lay.
Well, the thing is, Carvalho has the taste of the good life now. He doesn't want to give it up. So he's going to play every angle he can.
And I don't know about you, but I'm sitting here. I can't imagine that Mitt Romney wouldn't be just an absolutely toxic choice for old 894.
Well, so. I'm really endorsing for McCain.
Yeah.
Lieberman.
Now, see, I think Romney would be even more toxic. Because there's a bunch of fundy evangelicals that say, yeah, he's a good friend of Pastor Hagee, I think I can vote for him. But you take those same evangelicals, evangelicals, let's face it, that's what they are. You take those same evangelicals and you hand them Mitt Romney on the ticket, and they're going, but he ain't even a Christian at all. At least Lieberman was Jewish. He's kind of like an imperfected Christian. Not kidding. I mean, you know, I'm not pulling your leg. That's how they are.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. He may even go with
Kathleen Sebelius.
Yeah.
Oh no. We're talking about Republicans. I'm sorry. I'm addled.
Yeah.
And I got to get off the meth during the show. I really should, Kevin. I'm sorry.
I was thinking a younger looking senator. What's his name?
Lindsey Graham or?
Yeah, but.
Well, Lindsey Graham's got too big a case of the gay.
Oh yeah. I always wondered about him.
Oh, he's the biggest open secret in Washington.
Yeah, something always seemed kind of weird about him. He just seemed too delicate looking. Like. He puts too much sugar in his teeth.
Well, John Fox and I talked with Peter Godbold about it one evening, and Peter is our resident expert on gayness. And
I know Peter.
Yeah, and Peter said, oh yeah, that just lights up my gaydar, and that if you just ask around in the right circles, everybody else, Lindsey Graham, oh yeah.
Yeah, I could see it. Is he a bachelor or is he married?
Yes, he's very much one of those Southern bachelors.
Oh, one of those.
Yeah.
Where's he from, South Carolina?
Mm-hmm. And he is a colonel in the Air Force Reserve. Sits as a judge on the JAG court there. Yeah. So much for don't ask, don't tell.
Okay. Kind of reminds me of the character in the movie that was filmed in Savannah that Clint Eastwood did.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Yeah.
The Kevin Spacey character. Bingo. Yeah, you nailed it. Spot on, Kevin.
Yeah, that would be Graham. He always kind of reminded me of him, too.
There's a reason.
Yeah. So, living in a nice townhouse in Charleston. Nice antiques.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Food in the summertime.
But, I can't help it. I want it. There's something sick and twisted in me that really wants it to be Mike Huckstorby.
That would be like a downplay for Huckstorby now. You know, he has this big time job in Fox News.
Oh, yeah, he's a celebrity.
Yeah, yeah. He'll be moving on down if he gets the VP.
And, you know, he did say, I have no interest in ever running for president again. I have no interest in being the vice president, blah, blah, blah. It seems to me that's the most surefire way of distracting attention.
But I tell you, this whole House thing that McCain stepped on the landmine, if the Democrats are smart, they need to play it to death until he goofs again.
Yeah, well, and there is some follow-up, to because it goes back, this business with a previous interview, Think Progress is reporting on it. It goes back to, I'm trying to think, I'm looking here, how many years. Yeah, this goes back to a 2007 interview where McCain didn't know how many houses he, and you know, 2007. Back then he didn't know how many houses he owned. He didn't even know what kind of car he drove.
Oh, yeah. And then he has the audacity to say how Barack Obama lives in a $1 million house. I got news for you. Owning a $1 million house in Chicago or any... or New York?
Exactly.
It's a big deal. Guess what? Here in Brooklyn, the cheapest you can get a house is $800,000.
And that's probably not much house.
Well, no, it's not. No, it's not, because it's probably in one of the worst sections in Brooklyn where...
Three bedrooms, one bath? Two bedrooms, one bath?
Yeah.
And see, I was... In fact, we were talking about this, and I keep seeing these photographs... of Obama's house, and they all say, this is a photograph of the mansion that Barack Obama bought in...
It looks like Archie Bunker's house.
God almighty, if that's a mansion, they take a mighty broad view of mansions in Chicago.
Well, you see, you have to understand...
That's a pile of bricks is what that thing is.
Yeah, he's playing up to the... people in Utah where $200,000 could get your chateau.
Yeah. You know, a million dollar house in Chicago in, say, you know, the burbs downstate becomes a $250,000 house pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, I ain't buying.
No, but like I said, in red state America where housing is cheap.
$1 million house? Dang, he must be a millionaire.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, this is how they put the wool over your head. And it's just like, you know, like I keep on telling people in Florida, yeah, you can get a house. You just don't have a job to support that house.
Well, do you remember that stupid thing that Fox tried with Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire that just completely blew up in their faces?
Oh, yeah.
And the guy was a millionaire, and he was from San Diego.
Oh, yeah, and...
Well, he was a millionaire because of the value of his home, and it was a, you know, three-bedroom ranch style.
Oh, yeah. Thank
you. And it's all based on, you know, the skewed...
Well, California real estate, even if you do own a house, you're a millionaire. That's how expensive real estate in California is.
Well, precisely.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm kind of, it's very, very frustrating to be here in the hills sometimes, Kevin.
Yeah, and people need to realize the equation is the areas that have the most opportunity tend to have the highest real estate.
Sure, because there's that part of it is supply and demand.
Yeah.
Very, you know, you live in a place where there is a very limited supply of real estate. And therefore, demand goes up because everybody wants to be there, and then the market, therefore, reflects it in the prices. On the other hand, you go down to where I was born and raised in Alabama, lot less demand, lot cheaper home prices.
Yeah.
You know, you can live you can live in a Columbia, Tennessee, or a Muscle Shoals, Alabama, but you give up Saks Fifth Avenue, you give up symphony, you give up theater, you give up professional sports, You give up somewhere to go on a Friday night that wasn't the same place you went last Friday night.
Yeah. You give up hanging around professionals.
Yeah, that. Exactly. And, you know, for me sitting here in the hills and hollers.
I'm in my life in Florida.
it's a 12-mile round trip to the grocery store if the store hadn't closed. So it's all a swap and to sit there, because I guarantee you, if you took that million-dollar Chicago pile of bricks that Obama bought, and you put it, you put it right smack dab on Kanawha Boulevard in Charleston, that house is still $250,000 tops, because there's a whole row of those houses.
Oh yeah.
And that's about what they go for.
And Charleston is not really it's just a tourist town where. It's really not much opportunity in Charleston.
Well, Charleston, South Carolina, yeah, different matter. It might get a little closer to a million.
Well, because of the historic.
And because it's a really nice place to be, yeah. Hurricanes notwithstanding.
Yeah. But I just, you know, like I said, he's playing to the red state America crowd where real estate is not that much value.
Yeah, and where the idea of $1 million still has that sort of Dr. Evil cachet of $1 million.
Exactly. And it's not.
That's not a bunch of money. Being a millionaire was something once upon a time. But, you know, as you've noted, where the real estate values are vastly inflated, you can get to $1 million in a hurry. You can also get rid of $1 million in a hurry.
The only place that I say holds exception to that rule is Houston, Texas.
How so?
Houston, Texas, I think you can get a job that's paying about 40, 50 grand because of the oil companies, and they're doing extremely well. And housing is still within, you know,
striking distance. And part of that may be because Houston's economy, being based on oil, is so very much a reflection of boom and bust cycles.
Yeah.
Because when George Bush brought his economic collapse, you know, Bush's and economic collapses go together like, you know, peanut butter and jelly.
Oh yeah.
You could walk into a pawn shop anywhere in Houston and pick up a Rolex for next to nothing, and the used car lots were all covered with Mercedes and Porsche.
Yeah. Well, that's where I'm going when I want a Rolex. I have a feeling Houston will be falling in within the next year or two.
But not a Rolex. Hold out for the Patek Philippe. There's your that's nice.
Mm. I'm more.
See,
of a,
I still read the magazines and I still go, ooh, nice watch. And then the sane part of my brain goes, are you nuts? Even if you could afford a $20,000 watch, if you bought a $20,000 watch, you would deserve the ass kicking that you got for wearing it. So, yeah, but yeah, those nice things, sure, hard not to look at them, and hard not to want them when there's an entire culture out there that is designed, a consumer culture that's designed to make you feel like, well, I'm not much of a human being. I don't have a $50,000 watch.
Well, I tell you one thing. During the 90s, I bought myself an Omega. Still have it. Speedmaster, the one that went to the moon and back.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. And I don't regret buying it.
No, and well, once upon a time, I bought an antique Rolex. I was sort of charmed by it because it was made in the same year that I was born, and picked it up in a pawn shop for $50.
50?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't gold. It was all stainless.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, within sanity range.
Yeah. And, you know, I had it cleaned by a genuine Rolex repair guy, and I don't wear it anymore, but, you know, it's tucked away. I figured it would be a nice thing to pass along to the son or the daughter. Or,
yeah, it's worth about $5,000.
Yeah, but, so why take it out and mess it up somewhere? That's the thing with me, and it even extends, you know, around here, I know these guys who spend fortunes on firearms, Kevin.
Oh yeah.
Like Steyrs, and these these rifles that have exquisite woodwork stocks. And I look at them and I go,
under Italian made Beretta shotgun.
There you go. Or the genuine, honest to God Belgian Brownings, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, $15,000, $20,000, $50,000 shotguns. And I've looked at these guys. One of them, he was a buddy of mine. He had his federal firearms license, so he'd buy them on the cheap as a dealer and then just tuck them away in the safe. And I looked at him and said, you know, how could you ever go out into the woods with one of those? You would, you know, you'd sit and just hate yourself if you walked through a briar patch and got a scratch on that stock. And he said, that gun's not going out in the woods.
It's just to show off and look at.
Yeah. At which point I said, you know, that's the difference between us. I'm a utilitarian and you're, he said, some people buy gold, I buy guns. He said, because if I ever need the money, I can sell the guns faster than I could spend the gold. And he had a point there.
You think so?
Oh gosh, around here? Yeah, shoot, yeah. You can offload a fine piece of firearms workmanship, quicker than you could unload Kruger hands.
Well, that's the Northeast.
No, it's a redneck thing.
Wow. Well,
it's a wealthy redneck thing.
Oh yeah. Well, I know there's a lot of money in West Virginia. That I know.
Yeah, it's just not. It's not spread around.
Yeah, but there's a lot of banking activity and all that.
Sure. I mean, you got folks like Buck Harless and Mylon Puskar and. Don Blankenship and the Walker people who build the machines that destroy the mountains. Y'all, they've all of them. Every last one of them's got enough money to burn up a soaking wet elephant.
Yeah, and then you got that idiot who won the lottery, $100 million.
Oh, Jack Whitaker.
But a lot of money, mostly the strippers. But
yeah, and then the Atlantic City kneecap brigade came looking for him. I ain't got no money.
They stuck out like a sore thumb down there.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, Berkeley County, you'll probably have one or two like that in Berkeley.
Yeah, but Jack, very few people outside West Virginia really know the real deal about Jack Whitaker. That guy is a dick.
Well, yeah, I heard he was very mean to his workers.
Oh, he was terrible to his workers. And, he was already a millionaire when he won the lottery, but he was in a million-dollar hole when he won it, too, based on shoddy workmanship he'd done on state contracts. So, yeah, he wasn't quite the miracle. And then, you know, he had visited upon him all that karmic stuff that comes to people who, you know, mean people suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last time we talked, you said you were going to a weekend barbecue. And.
That was fun.
I gotta ask Kevin, how did it go?
It was fun. It was very nice. Yeah. Well, it's my neighbor. He lives two doors down.
Yeah.
It's fun. We enjoyed ourselves, cooked up a lot of meat, drank, smoked cigars, you know, talked. It lasted well until like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Man, that sounds like exactly where I want to be.
And it's all in the city, in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So I mean. Okay, pardon my ignorance. There's like yards where you are?
Yeah, well, you know, you ever seen The Cosby Show?
Yeah, sure.
I live in a house something like that, you know. So they're all attached, but they have backyards. And there's room enough to hold a good crowd of people. Like, roughly, there are about 40, 50 people there.
Shoot.
And, you know, like my backyard is like a jungle, you know. My mother plants everything. You know, we have a peach tree, and we're inviting people to pick peaches.
Wait a minute. No, this is too good, Kevin.
Yeah?
Wait, a tree grows in Flatbush?
Well, I don't live in Flatbush. I live in...
Yeah, but I mean, no. But no. What was the great book? A Tree Grows in Brooklyn?
A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Yeah. A peach tree grows in Kevin's backyard.
Yeah, but you know... Brooklyn is known as the greenest county in New York City.
No, I didn't know that. That's very cool.
Yeah, you know, you see, that's the stereotype. Mid-America has, like, no trees grow here. It's just tenements.
Right, yeah, that it's this urban wasteland. And please, bear in mind, Kevin, and you probably already know that is a very cultivated attitude in the South. I think I remarked before about what Pat Conroy wrote in The Prince of Tides, that, you know, hating New York is an art form among Southerners. But the beauty of it is that after he gets his hero up there, his hero, who has cultivated that art form, immediately falls in love with New York.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you get the, between that and, what's his name with the white suits, Tom Wolfe.
Yeah.
You know, I love Bonfire of Vanities because it pokes fun at New York City politics from a Southern point of view.
Right.
You know, but it's funny. But the strange thing about here is, like, a lot of Southerners are moving up here. You know, just moving up here. Well, first of all, for the job opportunities.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, especially around my area, people from, you name it. You know, it's amazing. And it's like a lot of...
Yeah, those Southern... Are you telling me that there are gooey Southern accents being added to the New York melting pot?
Well, they've always come and stayed. You know, because of the literary, you know, I think a lot of the Southerners...
Truman Capote, yeah.
Yeah, stayed in New York. He lived in Brooklyn Heights, which isn't too far from me.
Right.
I could see a Truman Capote living in Brooklyn because, first of all, he was Italian. He had an Italian last name, or he was adopted by a Cuban father, I think.
At one point.
Yeah, and he inherited that name, but, you know, his lifestyle would want, because that has always gone on. If you are of that persuasion, you move to New York.
Yeah, well, but also look at the semi-autobiographical writings of William Styron in Sophie's Choice.
Oh, yeah.
And the Stengo character, Southern, moved, yeah. And Lord knows, like I said, when I graduated high school, there were a handful of people who said, you know, time to go to New York.
Oh, yeah. You know, as soon as you graduated high school, you went to New York.
Our very good friend Steve Trash, the wonderful magician and independent film producer, spent a lot of years as a street magician in New York. Yeah. So,
I don't know what it is, I guess, because we're so busy and there's so much to do, we don't have time to focus on that. You know, it just amazes me. And, you know, this was the culture shock when I moved, when I lived in even Washington. You know, what's his name, who's based in Washington, who does the show at 5?
Yeah, Mark Levine, yeah. Mark Levine.
You know, being in New York, even D.C. was a shock for me.
Oh, D.C.'s a small southern town.
Yeah, and that's what I thought of it as.
Especially the actual environs of the District of Columbia.
Yeah, because...
You know, there's a city that was built on it was the worst land out there available, so naturally it was sold to the federal government. Yeah. It was one of the first real land deal boondoggles of the young United States. So we went into the swamp and built our federal capital there with slave labor. Nice. Yeah, there's some good karma flowing. And we wonder why Washington's the way Washington is.
But not only that, it was still a culture, and they talk about how liberal D.C. is. There's only one corner which I would say is liberal, and that's like DuPont Circle. And maybe a couple of areas of Georgetown, that's kind of hip. And now U Street has a little thing going on, but other than that, to me it's still very much a southern town.
Stodgy, southern, right.
Still very much a southern town. You know, there are enclaves where you can take a break from it, but it's still very much a southern town. You know, when I was down there last year this time, and it's amazing, you know, because once you step out of D.C., you're very much in the south, and you have certain mentalities that come through. You know, to me it was a bit more tolerable, but I don't know. You know, I found it a bit conservative for my taste.
Sure. Well, I tell you. So, is it just a quiet weekend in Crown Heights this weekend, Kevin?
No, I'm going to the beach tomorrow.
Rub it in. Just rub it in again. Why don't you?
I'm going to the beach tomorrow. Hey, you have the world at your fingertips, and that's the thing about New York. You have the world at your fingertips, and a relatively small. possible.
I keep buying my lottery ticket.
You don't need a lottery ticket. You just
When I win, Kevin, we're hanging.
Okay, you're more than welcome.
We're gonna paint the town red.
More than welcome. I can show you a lot of interesting spots.
Oh Lord, wouldn't I love it? Wouldn't I love it, Kevin? It's good talking to you, man. Enjoy the beach.
Yes, I will.
All right, bye now.
Okay, bye.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing, man?
Hey, good, Gary. How about you?
All right, quick call. I know you're running out a little bit of time here. Just want to let you know, I woke up this morning, had some good news. I was listening to the radio. Sometimes I wake up in the morning, I hear the right-wing station I have on sometimes by accident. Either way it was on, I was listening to them. And I'm telling you something, man. You know, Juanita was right from earlier when she called. They were hyperventilating over this whole housing thing. I mean, they were like freaking out over this thing.
This one hurts,
like,
doesn't it?
Strange.
Yeah, this one hurts.
Yeah, this one hurts, and they're worried about this one because I think this one goes to the core of the illusion that they've been trying to create. And I'm telling you, I wish I could have like taped it for you and like sent you the audio because they were kind of making it was just weird, man.
Was this a call-in show where?
Yeah, it's kind of like a calling show. I forgot who the host is. The guy, his name used to be Chris. What was the guy's name? He's here in D.C. It comes on 6:30 FM. You might have heard him, but I forgot the name of the guy who used to be the host. But they play Sean Henry during the day, and they got Rush Limbaugh, so they're on that channel. But this guy comes on from 9 to 12. From 8 to 12. And I'm telling you, man, they were hyperventilating. They were trying to make all kind of excuses. But McCain having all these houses, like, oh, you know, they had people calling and saying, well, you know, I worked hard and I, you know, I got 9, 10, 12 houses. That's nothing new in America. They're freaking out, man.
Cool.
They ain't got legs.
And you know, the other thing is, 7 is the conservative estimate on McCain's houses. That's not counting the condos.
Exactly.
This is just the freestanders.
Yeah, the Democrats should run with this one, man. I hope they do.
And I want somebody who has a little more exposure than I do, Gary, to get out there and say what we said about the Obama mansion, for God's sakes. Because it is. I mean, no offense to Obama, it's a pile of bricks.
Well, you know what happened? Yeah, I saw that. But you know what happened on top of that, you know, is that the right, I think they were trying to get into this thing about Obama's brother living in poverty. But what was happening was they happened, I think, when people called in, people were saying, well, you know, his brother's Africa, so they're trying to make they're making this connection. Well, maybe Obama doesn't have a lot of money either. So it's like that kind of like, but they were trying to, you know, paint this picture of Obama not being charitable to his brother. People are kind of making this connection that, hey, wait a minute, well, maybe Obama isn't that rich at all. And so I don't know, but I'm saying they're really in the tizzy over this damn housing thing. I'm loving it. I think it's funny.
Well, it is funny to watch him sweat. And you remember? Well, and speaking of which. You remember all the right wing hissy-fying about Al Gore's house? Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, the estimate.
They were talking about the energy that he was using.
Right. Now, my friends, he uses more than 30 households worth of electricity. Some environmentalist, right? Well, guess what? Somebody's beginning to nose around a little bit on old 894's carbon footprint.
And I think also the people found out because I think one thing Obama's done smart, well, I don't like to say Obama all the time because he has people who work for him, obviously, people who, like David Axelrod and all these other people who are, you know, very smart people. So I don't think we should always just be saying, oh, it's Obama's Obama because it's a big organization. But it's like they're dragging this whole VP thing out. So that blocks out McCain. But then it also focuses talking about the housing issue. But McCain can't really get into, you know, driving the issue the way he wants.
And that's, you know, that's what that one ad did. It drove that nail.
Yeah, it was a simple ad. It wasn't overly negative. It was just a point out of a fact. He couldn't remember how many houses he had.
And the estimate coming from a guy named Joe Rahm, who is part of Climate Progress, he's estimated that John McCain's 10 homes, counting condos, put out about 150 tons of carbon dioxide And curiously, that's about 10 times the amount of the average American home. You know, this guy's got a PhD in physics, so he kind of knows what he's talking about. And so, you know, the next step, I think what I want to see, Gary, and maybe what was bugging me a little bit last night, I want to see Obama stop counterpunching and start throwing lefts and jabs and hooks. And I think it's coming too. But to that end, I'd love to see an ad that says, you know, John McCain's carbon footprint is 150 tons, and that's 10 times as much as the average American. When will John McCain tell us that he's purchasing 100% renewable power? It would have to be finessed. It would have to be turned into littler words, more bumper stickery. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I remember you saying, you expand the tree out, like you use it like a root and just branch it out to everything else, you know, environment.
Yeah, and I want to see the Obama campaign create the issues. I want to see McCain go into explaining mode. And that is what's begun. That's what this housing issue is. That's a first, inspiring first step toward starting to throw the first punch.
Well, you know, it's like we were talking about last night. And I think using the boxing analogy is excellent because, you know, what I've been kind of saying, you know, we talked about this yesterday, is that the way I'm looking at it, if I'm looking at some boxing match, Obama's like taking the punches, but he's holding them. You know how you hold somebody close.
Yeah, it's hard not to say this. What Obama has been doing so far has been the rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
You know, tuck in on the ropes, tuck into the corner, let McCain punch himself out, and then hopefully come out and just land a flurry of knockout punches. Frazier. Down goes Frazier. You know, that's what I want.
But, you know, even in that, you know, you watch the fight, but, you know, even in that, Ali would always throw a little punch, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, just to keep you honest.
Yeah. So he's doing that. He's throwing a little punch to let you know, okay, I'm still here. He backs off a little bit. But he's, like, holding them close. And then I'm telling you, man, I believe around October 15th, maybe October after the base, I think they're just going to unload on McCain, man. Because McCain, it's just so much issue. I think they're just holding back. They're just waiting.
Well, I tell you something that I really want. And, of course, I'm not the high-paid millionaire political consultant that the others are. But during the Kerry campaign, if you recall, and you probably do, because a lot of us were just driven bug sprayed by this, a memo went out from John Kerry saying that during George Bush's coronation convention in 2004 that there would be no Democratic messaging of a negative quality toward poor little George. I mean, I call it the home on the range treatment, because all during that nasty little convention in New York, the Democrats stood back and never was heard a discouraging word, and the skies were not cloudy all day about George Bush. I would like to, because see, they've already announced that they're sending Romney and somebody else to Denver to sit there and needle all during the Democratic convention.
Giuliani.
Yeah, Giuliani. And by God, I think we ought to wear them out every blessed minute of the Republican convention. You know, no mercy. No mercy.
Well, I think now, I think the good thing about this whole House thing, that now it's going to hurt. It hurts. Because I think the Republicans want to put Mitt in there so bad. Because he's a corporate freaking whore, shield, whatever you want to call him. He's the perfect candidate for them to just do what the corporations want. Now, with McCain, with this housing thing, it's going to be very hard to put somebody like Mitt, who has like got $250 million, almost, you know, $500 million, as vice president. I mean, that's a narrative that the Obama people say, okay, here we are again. Look at all these millionaires and billionaires that place for you people. So it's going to be interesting if he actually will go for Mitt Romney now. But, you know, I don't think he's going to be leaving him, but I don't know what they're going
to
do over there.
Well, and the other thing, and I had a request to let folks know about this. We've got a couple of minutes here. The audio on this little 30-second spot from McCain has got, you know, there are some that they throw out there that are just slam dunks, and this is one of them. Check out the audio to this, Gary.
Washington's broken. John McCain knows it. We're worse off than we were 4 years ago. Early McCain has taken on big tobacco, drug companies, fought corruption in both parties. He'll reform Wall Street, battle big oil, make America prosper again. He's the original maverick. One is ready to lead. McCain.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
Are there people in America that are actually buying that, Gary?
Well, I don't know, but did you see the one he put out defending the housing thing yesterday when he started talking about Obama and Resco? Did you see that one?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a terrible ad. I didn't even know.
It was, and Fox News, the funny thing is Fox News refused to run that ad, and then they ran it by accident today. But, you know, this line about Washington is broken. Well, how long has McCain been in part of that part of broken Washington? How's he going to fix what he helped to break?
Well, my problem with the Obama ads a lot of time, they keep using this guy who sounds like he's just this very sweet. It's not hard hitting enough. I mean, I think he has the content and the writing is good, but he always seems to want to keep a nice veneer over the ad. Like, I'm just mentioning how corrupt John McCain is, as opposed to saying, you know, John McCain is a corrupt MF. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what kind of bothers me a little bit with his ads. But, you know, if that works for them, maybe that works for them. I will come a little bit more hard.
Yeah, I want the movie phone guy for Obama. In a world where right-wingers have destroyed, you know.
America's on the edge of destruction.
Right.
And only one man stands in between you and you know, whatever. And he ain't the Messiah.
Hey, Gary, you have a great weekend, my friend. It's time for me to roll out of here.
Okay, guys.
All right, take care. Bye now. In a world where right-wingers have pretty nearly bankrupted the country. One man. See, yeah. Oh, and you think I don't have a... You don't think that... Yeah, there's other careers out there for me. Not that I'd want them. Hey, thanks, everybody, for a wonderful week. Sorry about the couple of nights that I missed, but those were a couple of wonderful nights spent with family. Next week is looking real, real normal, except for the fact that we're going to have the coolest convention coverage out there with Guy James and Mark Levine, probably an extended, modified schedule of programs. I'm waiting to hear from Guy and Mark as to what they want to do. I'll be here for my show. I will probably be behind the board starting at about 11 a.m. and going to about 1 a.m. You know, this is what you do when the chips are down. Thanks to Peter Godbold, who will be a rerun this evening. He has a hurricane on top of his house tonight, by the way. He's doing fine, but the world's crappiest ISP is not going to get packets through Hurricane Faye. It ain't happening. So Peter will be a rerun of his May 6th program, which was wonderful. And that's it for live programming for this week. Don't forget the weekend schedule, however. The Rick Smith Show beginning sometime after 5 p.m. on both Saturday and Sunday, as well as Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday, and Night Sounds with your host Billy Shears at 9 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday, and then everything just runs in a loop for the rest of the weekend. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. John, by the way, did the music background track for the wonderful Cold River Wind ad. Wasn't that something? Isn't he something? Thanks to every last one of you who helped keep the horn going. Thank you in words that I can't fully express. Thank you for what you're doing with ColdRiverWind.org. Right now, just happened, just hit as I was on the way off the air. Our buddy Nick says, we just hit 5,000 signatures on the Cold River Wind petition. You guys are getting it done. Thank you. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.